Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It was a disaster. Well, not a disaster, but the fact of the matter is, I'd actually planned to watch the Mountaineer game, but then I decided I'd just turn the sound down and sort of watch it out of the corner of my eye. But then dark fell, and Ferg was at wrestling practice, and I wound up having to go up there. And there's not even cell service, so it was, you know, a total bust. And then so were the Mountaineers. Ferg is off at an actual wrestling match tonight. And the fact that the team is getting home late probably means that somewhere along the way somebody won a match. Or two. Seems highly unlikely one of them would be Ferg, but, it's possible, I suppose. But we're here and we're ready to go. And I'm sorry about last night. A couple of program notes before we get into the meat of the program. I was iffy on whether or not there would be a New Year's Eve show, because I did a Christmas Eve show, and that turned out quite nicely. There will not be a New Year's Eve show. But it has nothing to do with my desires for life of leisure. I've told you for a long time now about the various and sundry problems that we are having with our internet connection. And I had a lengthy conversation with the fine folks at CityNet, and I mean that. They really are fine folks. The problems that we've been experiencing with a couple of limitations are not their problems. The fact that we've got a T1 line that comes in here that doesn't give us T1 duplex service more likely than not falls on the shoulders of Frontier telephony. And when they mean Frontier, they mean they actually use technology from the late 19th century. You know, two dented tomato cans and a string. And that's probably a big part of the problems that we've been having. But I've been told by them that they want to do some, and God only knows what this means. I'm just glad it doesn't involve me physically. They want to do some intrusive testing. But to do intrusive testing, that means they have to shut the whole thing down. So for some time on Friday, time that I've been told will take hours, we're going to be shut down. No internet service whatsoever. And as a consequence, that makes it rather difficult to do a show. Exactly, Texas Betsy. You know, Frontier won't even spring for new unrusted tomato cans. It's the dented tomato cans that are causing all the problems. That's, you know. Exactly. Hey. So, Friday is looking really iffy. If we come back in time for me to actually do research and do a show, I will. But if we are shut down, we are shut down. Of course, I could stand out on the porch and holler, and y'all could just stand out and imagine you're hearing my tiny, tinny little voice coming at you from across the thousands of miles, but no. Or we could take that next step in broadcasting, and we could just think radio at each other. No, not that either. Okay, so that's Friday, so we took care of that. We took care of last night. Show tomorrow, and on Monday, show on Monday. Monday will be the 3rd of January, I do believe. Yes, I can count. Woo, he can be taught. Normal week Monday. And hopefully by Monday we will have all this internet business sorted out. And it will all make sense. And they will know who to scream, and the fine folks at CityNet will know who to scream at Frontier. Ma? Ma? Climb up on the pole there and see if Bob's got a wire loose, would you? I'm a-hurrying, Pa. Frontier. God, if they only know the negative publicity they're getting from me. Well, there's no such thing as bad PR. Yeah, John Fox, as the stomach turns. Exactly. But, no, Monday, please, Monday, let's have this. Because this has been a problem for a little over a year to a year and a half, really. I won't go into the details because that's just far too intergeeky. Yeah, and just as a reminder, David in Tennessee points out, didn't Joe Manchin pick out Frontier Dented Can Company special just for us? Yes, sir. And gave all the telecommunications stimulus money to Frontier to buy more dented tomato cans and more string. Maybe they'll upgrade to actual sisal hemp twine this time. I hear it works great. And speaking of Joe Manchin, I'm in print again. If you want to run over to wvgazette.com or check my Facebook page, I also posted it there. I pointed out that there is a distinct similarity between the way Joe Manchin responded to gay people in service to the United States when he ran away from the Don't Ask, Don't Tell legislation, and the way he has turned an impassive deaf ear to the cry of people subjected to human rights torment in southern West Virginia's mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. Same, same. So you can go to wvgazette.com, you can click on opinion, and you'll see Bob Kincaid, Manchin's shameful record or something like that. Manchin and shameful are in the title. I didn't choose the headline. So there's that. Let's see, 7 minutes past the hour, quick fundraising note. Let's just get this out of the way. I went and tallied up all of what's come in, and we are at roughly $1,750 for the month of December. So that ain't bad. That ain't bad at all. That's better than, well, but it's not $2,500, and that's actually what it takes, so the rest of it comes out of my hide. But thank you all for what you have done to keep things going over the course of the past month. I mean, there's a chance of a miracle. Miracles being things that you decide to do, God is not going to drop any money on me. It's like the old joke about the pastor, the tent revivalist, and the fellow looks at him and says, you know, you pass the hat every night, preacher, and you tell them that you're going to give it to God. How do you give it to God, preacher? The preacher says, well, son, here's how it goes. I pass the hat every tent meeting, and after the tent meeting, I go outside. And I take that hat and I say, God, I'm going to throw all this money in this here hat up in the air. And what you want, you take and keep. And what lands on the ground will be mine. Okay, God, here goes. Hadn't failed yet. But that's them. This is us. But thank you. Thank you, those of you who have contributed over the course of the year. Because we are at the end of the year, and it is thank you time. Thank you very much to all of you who have contributed over the year to make one more year of liberal conversation radio possible. It's a little bit amazing. It's not a miracle. It's just an evidence of your determination. And determined you have been. So there we stand for the month of December, around $1,750. And thank you to all of you who make that much happen. Thank you very, very much. Just to remind, for years, literally, the fundraising goal was at $2,000. But then I had a conversation with Ben Birch and realized that he had been carrying a big chunk of the WhiteRoseSociety.org on his own back. So we upped it to $2,500 to try to defray some of those costs, because that's about what it costs per month for the White Rose Society to stream and podcast and archive The Horn. So there you go. It would be nice to get there, but I understand how hard it is for everybody involved in living here, living now. So, okay, we've taken care of all the program notes, right? Wait a minute. I mentioned the preacher joke. Damn. Is it Wednesday? Bless my soul, it is! It is Wednesday, brethren and sister, and that means it is, in fact, prayer meeting Wednesday right here on the Horn. Yeah, we're coming up on New Year's, and of course, the deacons won't be drinking the hard stuff New Year's Eve. They'll be drinking grape juice, just like what Jesus drank, because they didn't really have wine in the ancient world. When it says wine in the Bible, it actually means grape juice. They'll be having grape juice and maybe some little Jimmy Dean sausage balls. And the various deacons will be involved in various, but well, they probably won't all be together because you know how it is. All that intermingling, it's kind of like Shania Twain. You heard about Shania Twain, right? Turns out that her husband, the rock and roll producer, what was his name, Mutt Lang, he was romping with her best friend's wife, and so they got divorced, Shania and Mutt did, and now Shania's a marrying up with the husband of the woman what Mutt was romping with. Right. That's how it is with the deacons. Between that, between getting them to decide which flavor of cobbler they want and which other deacon's wife they want, there's practically steam coming out of their ears. But it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. The deacons are done with the cobbler. They've gone upstairs. They're milling around out in the vestibule and out in the parking lot of smoking with the heathens. And it's time to pass the plate. As the plate passes you, just remember, please, brethren and sistren, don't make change in the collection plate. Just drop a little and go on. There's a little button right in the midst of all that red velvet at the bottom of that brass plate, and it says PayPal, and you just click, and you can become a member of the Nifty Thrifty 250. Because after all, for only $10 a month, that means you're getting the program for less than 5 cents per hour. And I can't think of anything out there that goes for 5 cents an hour. I offered somebody 5 cents an hour one time, and she darn near slapped me. But anyway, brethren and sistren, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And if minister of music, brother, please, could you come up and lead us in the offertory hymn? Hallelujah.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen. Let me hear you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Mersey notes and nosy notes and little lambs and ivy, a killing ivy too, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? Hallelujah, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. The deacons have come in out of the parking lot, down through the vestibule. They're waiting for you down in the first row where the deacons sit. And you just need to get yourself on down that blood red carpet and fall on your knees in front of the altar and lay your hands upon the subwoofer. and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you. Glory, glory, glory. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and I am Archpope, Rabbi, Imam, Elder, Shaman Bob Kincaid. And this is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and you can just feel the rays are reverberating around your noggin, can't you? Hallelujah, glory. Yes, amen and amen. We go because we've been hanging out there for a couple of days now. We go to Texas, glory, hallelujah, to the Lone Star State for some real Christianitizing. Amen and amen. I offer you, brethren and sistren, I offer you the tale of a pastor being persecuted in the state of Texas. She is being persecuted. Pastor Sandy McGriff. Pastor Sandy McGriff sounds a little like grift, sounds a little like graft. Pastor Sandy McGriff is being persecuted by the legal authorities there, just as bad as them early Christians who got a sharpened spike rammed up their bottoms by Nero and set on fire in the Vatican Gardens. She's being persecuted. How's she being persecuted, brethren and sisters? She's been charged with burglary. She's been charged with stealing, larceny, brethren and sisters. And she is cooling. No, she's been let out on $26,000 bail. For a Christmas Eve burglary of one of her parishioners' homes. Yeah. According to the Dallas Morning News, somebody in a neighborhood dropped the dime on Pastor McGriff, as they saw her entering and leaving the house of Sarita Agnew in Dallas. When she was leaving the home of Sarita Agnew, she was carrying about $10,000 worth of fur coats, designer purses, and electronics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she said, and this is how we know her innocence, brethren and sisters. They asked her about it, and she said, I thought I was helping. Mm-hmm. She said a friend sent her to pick up her coats and that her arm was injured because she couldn't find a key under the doormat, and she had to break in through the window. Of course, the police then called Sarita Agnew, whose place it was, and she said, I didn't give anybody permission to go into my house and take my stuff. But then the story changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. She changed the story when she said, I'll let you hear it for yourself. But hear the servant of God, the servant of the Almighty, amen and amen.
I have been a pastor for 8 years. I have been ordained for 8 years. I have been in the ministry for 11 years. I spoke with Sarita on Christmas Eve. She was at her sister's house. I was at a girlfriend's house when I spoke with her. When I left my girlfriend's house from talking to her, I had to go to that neighborhood because her cousin had fixed a peach cobbler for me for Christmas.
What did I tell you about the cobbler? What did I tell you?
But something just told me to go past her house. And when I went...
Something. Maybe it was the Lord.
Past her house, there were two guys coming from on the side of the house.
Mm-hmm. There's always two guys. They always work in pairs.
I pulled all the way in Sarita's driveway. Usually, Sarita keeps a key under her floor, under her mat. The key was not there. So I walked around her house, and when I walked around her house, I saw that the window was broke. My mistake was, I did not call 911, and I went through the window. I just used poor judgment. When I saw the window was broke...
There was a house full of furs and electronics and jewelry, and she used poor judgment and went through the window. I think there's a Beatles song about that, isn't there?
I then got a barrel and went in, and I know she keeps her computer on her bed I said, well, let me get what I know that they would probably want. I went to her bedroom, and I got her laptop. I put it in the car, and then I went to her, I went to her bedroom, I got the laptop on the way out.
Come on, Holy Spirit! Come on! Give it a spirit! Come on! All that clapping.
The coats were right there, and I just grabbed everything at once, things that I thought that they would come back and take. Because a laptop is something everybody wants. And I went out the back door, and on the way out, I saw what she calls a mink, and I took that, and that was what was...
What she calls mink. We all know it ain't really a mink. We know it's a coyote. But she calls it a mink.
Laying on top of the car when I turned around and the police were there. I explained to them what was going on. But they said... I mean, they didn't believe
you. You ever seen a Dallas cop do a spit take? Hey, wait, come here, you gotta hear this.
Yeah, they didn't believe any of it. Mm-mm. And then once he said, I told him I just finished talking to Sarita, and I gave him my phone. He called Sarita. Sarita said she didn't give anybody any permission to go in her house, which she hadn't given me permission. But
oops.
If I see two guys leaving your house, leaving from side of your house, I would check on it. They told.
Just like a good neighbor, Sandy McGriff is there. Right. I think I prefer the lizard.
Told me to put my hands behind my back. I was under arrest. And when they put the handcuffs on me, I told him, I said, the handcuffs are too tight. I have a problem, a skin condition. And he said, those handcuffs aren't tight. So I said, sir, please look at my wrist. I have a skin condition. And he just insisted that they were not.
It was due to be healed the next week, right?
Too tight. So two of them took me, and they shoved me into the car.
Shoved.
And then I sat in the car, and my hands were hurting. And I did remove the handcuff. And when
St. Paul was in chains in a prison, and the Lord sent an earthquake to bust him out. I reckon, neither the Lord nor Harry Houdini showed up for Sandy McGriff.
He opened the door. I told him I had to take the handcuffs off because they were hurting me. I made no attempt to get out of the car. And then that's when one got on one side of the car, and one was on this side of the car, and then one grabbed me by my hair and pulled me backwards in the seat, and then they put two sets of handcuffs on me, and then they put those things around my ankles. And then when we got to the jail...
Well, you know what? I mean, she's a minister of the gospel. She's magic. She can make them handcuffs disappear. You might want to double up. Now, in all truth, it sounds like Dallas cops behaving like Dallas cops, fact of the matter is. And listen, I'll say this. The Reverend McGriff is a lady of color. And I'm betting if that had been, because he's in Texas too, if that had been Pastor John Starve Hagee carrying out the Christmas ham, a side of beef, and, you know, those things that matter most to Pastor Hagee, you know, maybe a few hundred gallons of jet fuel and some McGuire's polish for his Rolls Royces. I'm guessing the cops wouldn't ask twice. Oh, that's just Pastor Hagee doing what Pastor Hagee does. But not in this case.
They didn't allow me to walk in with dignity. They carried me in. I was not violent. I was not confrontational or anything. It was though they were trying to show that they had made. I don't know what they were trying to show. It was unnecessary force. I did not go there to break in Sarita's house. I'm telling my story because Sarita has been a member of my church. She has been my armor bearer. But my intentions.
My what? My what? Hold on. My what bearer? I mean, I speak Southern and Texan and everything.
Necessary force. I did not go there to break in Sarita's house. I'm telling my story because Sarita has been a member of my church. She has been my armor bearer. But my intentions were to just, if they were going to come back, just to save what I could save of hers. I am her pastor. I was her pastor. I love Sarita to this day. In spite of everything that's happened, I would still be there for Sarita. I would still help Sarita.
And Sarita's first. See, that's the thing. Sarita had been her armor bearer. And the Reverend Sandy McGrath, or McGriff, was just being her fur bearer. Fur bearer and varmint? No. I don't know. You got to wonder, was handcuff removal covered in divinity school? Yep, there's more. News Ninja Gene, maybe the two men leaving the house were Mormon missionaries just trying to spread the gospel and encourage a little food preparedness stuff. Yeah. Glenn Beck, sure. But, well, you know, it's prayer meeting Wednesday. Been my armor bearer. Is this the gird up your loins kind of put on the armor of righteousness? I remember a story a few years back about armor of the Lord pajamas for little fundamentalist children. Yeah. And then this... bless his heart, there is a blogger that I've referred to before, runs a blog called Barefoot and Progressive in Kentucky. Our buddy Corey in the Free State of Louisville has sent us links periodically along the way from Barefoot and Progressive, and he is right on top of this of the Creationism Ark Museum. And he asked the ark builders whether or not there would be dragons and unicorns on the ark at the Ark Adventure. And this is the answer he got back. Since the Bible mentions unicorns in a few passages, Deuteronomy 33:17, Numbers 23:22-24:8, Psalm 22:21, audible, hike, Psalm 29:6, Psalm 92:10, and Isaiah 34:7. Some may wonder if such unihorned deer were the unicorns of old. That would certainly be possible and may explain the images of unicorns in historic artwork. Or maybe it be an artwork, maybe it's explained by, I don't know, the imagination. Like the fire-breathing dragons clearly based on, but also a stretch from, real dinosaurs, perhaps the horse and narwhal-like unicorns were based on rare sightings of deer, goats, oryx, and other four-legged animals with similar single central horn mutations. And then Joe Zonka, who runs Barefoot and Progressive, also notes, the other hypothesis, which seems equally plausible, is that the unicorn refers to the rhinoceros. After all, unicorn, as mentioned above, simply means one horn, and the rhinoceros is the only known animal to normally have one horn. And it's made out of hair and stuff, and it's real icky. It's not really horn. The rhinoceros would also fit in the Bible passages that mention unicorns without any inconsistencies. I didn't know the unicorns were mentioned with inconsistencies. Last night I shot an elephant in my pajamas. What an elephant was doing in my pajamas, I'll never know. Oh, Jeebus. Just another Wednesday. Jay writing in... says, one of my favorite British comedians, Tony Hancock, had a radio show in the 1950s that co-starred Sidney James, who went on later to do the Carry On film series. In one episode, Sid, who plays the likable criminal type, is caught robbing a jewelry store after throwing a brick through the window. His explanation? I saw a Colorado Beetle... No, wrong accent. Saw a Colorado Beetle on the store window, so I throw a brick at it. When the police arrived, I was just trying to put all that lovely jewelry back in the shop window. It only looked like I was taking it. Yeah. See, the back when I was having a cup of coffee in law school, we were always told about the guy caught with the TV and his, yeah, these two guys down back the alley, they just handed it to him. I'm holding it for him. Maybe back in a minute. Well, she was my armor bearer. I'm her fur bearer. God. And they wonder why people are fleeing in droves, staying away in droves from the churches. And yet people who don't buy into organized religion are the ones with the problem. Well, I picked her laptop up and her fur coats, what she calls a fur, because I knew that's what she'd want the most. Everybody wants a laptop. Everybody. She's going to have a great opportunity for some ministering in the prison. Because, mm-hmm. See, it's Texas. And she'll be lucky if she even gets a trial. We hang fur thieves in these parts, sister. Yeah. Ouch. Ouch. But it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And we have our fair share of prayer meeting kind of stuff. And we've got other stuff I want to get into as well. Let's see. This one kind of grabbed me earlier because we'd mentioned it on the show previously. There's a story out there, and I'd mentioned it. The Vatican scientists are said to be on the verge of urging support for genetically modified basically famine in a test tube crops. The Vatican said, really, no kidding, the Vatican said, scientists, this is a quote, scientists have both the right and a moral duty to be stewards of God by genetically modifying crops to help the world's poor. The Vatican has officially condemned opposition to genetically modified crops in rich countries. They say it's unjustified. The Pontifical Academy of Sciences demands a relaxation of what they call excessive unscientific regulations for approving genetically modified crops. They say that these prevent development of crops for the public good. I didn't know that the Vatican had any cardinals from Monsanto, but it seems pretty clear that they do. And now, apparently, now, the U.S. has jumped on the bandwagon, saying that, in fact, the church should, yes, indeed, formally go forward and endorse genetically modified famine in a test tube crops. I found it over at Truthout. U.S. to Vatican, genetically modified food is a moral imperative. Remember we were talking the other night about, you know, the potatoes with the gene from a goat's stomach in it? Yeah. Franken carrots? The island, you know, what is this? The island of Dr. Delmati? And this actually goes back to, lo and behold, it's proving more valuable every day, the WikiLeaks documents. Who knew? Mike Ludwig, writing for Truthout, says in today's Truthout, secret United States diplomatic cables released by WikiLeaks detail efforts to promote genetically modified crops and biotechnology across the globe, including the Vatican, where U.S. diplomats have pushed the Roman Catholic Church to support biotech food in developing nations. Remember back during the Bush administration, when during the rebuilding of Iraq planning, the idea was that we were going to take this area that was literally the cradle of agriculture to begin with, where the idea of deliberately growing things first took hold in the human consciousness, or roughly that region. And we were going to compel the Iraqis to, when they went to grow wheat and barley and such, to only grow Monsanto-approved, U.S.-provided, genetically modified barley and wheat. Well, that'll work great. Because remember, the fun part about all of that is that that seed will not sprout the next year, so farmers cannot do what farmers, for the 5,000 to 7,000 years in which agriculture has been in business, not business, in use, so that farmers can't do what they've always done, which is save some seed back from the previous year so they can plant the next year's crops. This goes back to 2005, once again, the Bush administration. A U.S. diplomat and a U.S. AID official met with Catholic leaders in Rome to discuss biotech foods. The diplomats reported that Catholic leaders said the science and safety of GM food would soon be a non-issue in the Vatican. It'll soon be a non-issue in the Vatican. And signaled a cautious acceptance of biotech products despite active opposition among the faithful. Well, so much of Catholicism is pawned off on its so-called faithful against the faithful's wishes. Here in the United States, most Roman Catholics understand that priests should be able to get married, that women should be able to be priests, that looking the other way on kitty rape is not a good idea. But here's the quote from the cable. Preoccupation at the Vatican, they said, was tied more to economic arguments as some fear that widespread use of GMO food in the developing world would subjugate its farmer population and become a form of economic imperialism simply serving to enrich multinational corporations. Duh. But the U.S. diplomats pledged, oh, we promise, fingers crossed, to continue pushing GM foods as a moral imperative to feed growing populations in order to counter opposition to the biotech food industry among Catholic activists and clergy. That is 2005. You ever wonder how this stuff works? That's 2005. These are the waning days of 2010. It may have taken 5 years, but the Bush administration effort to lobby on behalf of people like Archer Daniels Midland and ConAgra and Monsanto has finally paid off. With the Vatican, but really, does the Vatican, do they understand the danger they create and the harm that they potentiate? You know, the story of maize is a fascinating thing over the course of some 10,000 years, I think. It comes from a grass that you wouldn't even recognize as corn. And it's all a function of natural selection. See, genetic modification is not natural selection, that's unnatural selection. And every plant on the planet is put at hazard by genetically modified food. And this from the Vatican. Remember, do you remember the absolute shit hissy that the Vatican had when a child was born from a test tube, conceived in a petri dish? She's alive to this day, I do believe. And the Vatican questioned her humanity. Then there's the story of the little girl with a gluten allergy. Oh, a gluten allergy. What? No, gluten allergies are very serious, and they make people very, very sick. And this poor child had the misfortune a few years back of being born into a devoutly Roman Catholic family.
where they took the eating of the cracker that turns into Jesus meat somewhere in your alimentary canal very seriously. And their child was forever barred from consuming the body of Christ Jesus, according to Roman philosophy. And so they went to the bishop and said, please, for the sake of our little daughter who can't consume wheat or wheat products or wheat gluten, can we please go with a rice host for her? Can she have her cracker made out of rice so that she won't get desperately sick from eating Jesus every week? And the diocese said, no! She can eat her Jesus the same way the rest of us eat Jesus. The church has a 2,000-year-old tradition to uphold and church teaching, and she needs to eat her wheaty Jesus and quit her mewling and puking and swelling and blowing up and vomiting and farting. She needs to eat her wheaty Jesus and shut up. They're Episcopals now, because they went down the street, and, you know, once you get away from the pedophilia and the only guys can be priests part of it, there's not a lot of difference between your average Episcopal and your average Roman Catholic. And they're Episcopals now, or were last time I checked. So while they object to things like as simple as a host made of rice, or a human being who was created as a function of artificial insemination, they are willing to endorse Dr. Caligari's greenhouse, home of the omnivorous cauliflower. What are you going to do? You know, this is one of the curses of so short a life. I'd like to live 1,000 years. Just so I could sit back and watch religion slowly die.
I'm melting. Oh, my beautiful evil. Melting.
But I won't, and neither will you. But we do have the comfort of knowing that eventually it will. Because clowns like this... that makes certain that religion dooms itself. Cassie writing in, she said, do Catholics believe they're going to be raptured before the food makes, or ruptured, I don't know, before the food makes them sick? You know, that's the kind of theological question, Cassie, that caused the slaughter of tens of thousands of human beings, and I ain't going there. So here we are at a quarter before the hour, and like I said, I came to the program tonight loaded for bear. And I'm going to get to as much as I possibly can. So let's take a little break and come back. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. Consistent with tonight's program, a little something John Fox sent along from a fellow by the name of Tim Minchin. You're going to like this. This is the horn.
Life is like an ocean voyage, and our bodies are the ships. And without a moral compass, we would all be cast adrift. So to keep us on our bearings, the Lord gave us a gift, and like most gifts you get, it was a book. I only read one book, but it's a good book, don't you know? I act the way I act because the good book tells me so. If I want to know how to be good, it's to the good book that I go. Because the good book is a book, and it is good, and it's a book.
I know the good book's good because the good book says it's good. I know the good book knows it's good because a really good book would. You wouldn't cook without a cookbook, and I think it's understood. You can't be good without a good book, cause it's good, and it's a book, and it is good for cooking. I tried to read some other books, but I soon gave up on that. The paragraphs ain't numbered, and they complicate the facts. I can't read Harry Potter, cause there were some painful scars on that. Dumbledore's a poker, and that's bad, cause it's not good. Morality is written there in simple white and black. I feel sorry for you heathens, got to think about all that. Good is good and evil's bad, and goats are good and pigs are crap. You'll find which one is which in the good book, cause it's good, and it's a book, and it's a book. I had a cat, she gave birth to a litter. The kittens were adorable, and they made my family laugh. But as they grew, they started misbehaving. So I drown the little fuckers in the bath. When the creatures in your care start being menaces, the answers can be found out there in Genesis. Chapter 6, verse 5, 7, 8, 4. Swing your partner by the hand. Have a baby if you can. But if the voices in your head say to sacrifice your kid, to satiate your loving gods, that is for a dead baby, but it's simple faith the book demands. So raise that knife up in your hand. Before the good book made us good, there was no good way to know if all things was good or not that good, or kind of touch and go. So God decided he'd give writing allegoric prose ago, and so he wrote a book, and it was generally well received. The Telegraph said this God is reminiscent of the Norse. The Times said kind of turgid, but I like the bit with horses. The Mail said lots of massacres, a violent tour de force. If you only read one book this year, then this one is a book, and it is good, and it's a book. Hee-haw, swing your daughter by the hand. But if she gets raped by a man and refuses then to marry him, stone her to death. If you just close your eyes and block your ears to the accumulated knowledge of the last 2,000 years, then morally, guess what? You're off the hook. And thank Christ you only have to read one book. Just because the book's contents were written generations hence by hairy desert dwelling gents squatting in their dusty tents, just because what heaven said was said before that leavened bread, just because Jesus couldn't read doesn't mean now we should need when manipulating human genes to alleviate pain, fight disease, when deciding whether it's wrong or right, to help the dying, let go of life, or stop a pregnancy when it's just a tiny blastocyst. There's no reason why we should take a look at any other book but the good book, cause it's good, and it's a book, and it's a book, and it's quite good.
What a tour de force. A good book by Tim Minchin. About 11 minutes before the hour, and we're going to sort of move away from the general religious theme for the time being here, because there's some other stuff on my mind. Like I said, Ferg is off at a wrestling match, and that meant that I had to take him up to go to the wrestling match, and it's off in a county to be named later. Not home yet. Haven't heard any text messages or anything. Dad, come get me, because Agnes is going to go get him. There's no way to get around it. She hates to drive in the dark, and I don't blame her. And, you know, there's stuff like black eyes to worry about, and we got one vehicle, and, you know, that preys on her mind, but you got to go get the boy. But anyway, I had to take him up there, had to be there. We left here at 7 a.m. So that afforded me the opportunity. And I don't know if you'd actually call this an opportunity or not, but it was what it was. To come back home, and, you know, I'm a night guy. It's difficult for me to get up early in the morning because, as I've tried to explain to others before, my my 5 p.m. is 9 p.m. And nobody coming home from work at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or whatever walks in the door and says, I'm going straight to bed. You got to wind down a little bit. So generally I fall asleep somewhere around midnight, 1 o'clock. Then somebody listening to the rerun after Malloy or on the rerun stream will call at 2:30. But that's okay. We answer those calls. But anyway, that makes getting up at 6 kind of brutal. But I did, and came back and got my coffee and sat down and just decided to check out the morning news programs. Fox is a total waste of time. We all understand that. But the thing that you have to find out is that they are equally vapid on CNN, and equally vapid on ABC and CBS and NBC and MSNBC. It's all vapid. It's vapid. And they're all done by, no offense, cutesy women who are hired more for their looks than their journalistic credentials. And here's a real catty one. I can't watch CNN's morning news because they got this one woman doing the news who's got this thing right over her lip. Agnes tells me it's a beauty mark, but I'm just reminded of that scene from Uncle Buck where John Candy tells the school principal, here's a quarter, go downtown and pay some rat to gnaw that thing off your face. Because it's not like it's over on some unobtrusive part of her face where it's not doing anything. I swear it moves across her mouth. And from the vapid to the fact that that's the only thing I can see on the TV screen, which proves how shallow I am, I got to go somewhere else. But today, today on the TV news, in the morning, we got a litany on every channel of the disaster in New York City, the snowpocalypse. Nonetheless, I mean, you know how the banter goes. And now from the cute brunette, we've got the list of most beneficial fast food desserts. Sydney, is the non-dairy milkshake from Wendy's on the list? Golly gosh, I do hope. I so enjoy one with my burger. Oh, that's great. They call that, I don't know if you realize this, they call that happy talk. That's the generic term for it. When the two hosts are looking at each other and it's all Ron Burgundy. That's called happy talk. It gets referred to in scripts. Happy talk out. Happy talk over play out. Happy talk to play out. Happy talk. Going back to the article the other night from that I referenced Monday evening from Chris Hedges about the difference between Aldous Huxley and George Orwell, the difference between 1984 and Brave New World. This is the Brave New World part of it, where everybody is just happy. Right? So today it was about the snowpocalypse in New York City. And you know, one of the curses as you grow older, generally, women recognize it in their mothers, and men recognize it in their fathers. Just because I think that's how we're wired. But there comes a time somewhere in your life, like it did in mine, where this morning, I found myself screaming at the television screen, and I looked up and went, holy cow, I've turned into my father. And it's not always a bad thing, it just comes as a bit of a shock. Because you spend your adolescence and your young adult life saying, well, I'll never be like him. I'll never be like her. And then you are. And so I'm screaming at the television screen as they're interviewing people in Brooklyn and out in the boroughs generally about the fact that they are still snowed in, still their cars have been walled in by mounds of slush and that have frozen into basically icebergs,
And they show these people trying desperately to dig out. You know, it sounds like some sort of Kurt Russell movie, Escape from Brooklyn. And the chirpy, cheery thing with the thing on her face still isn't asking the question. At this point, I'm nearly purple in the face asking it myself. Trying, like I said earlier, you know, if the internet goes out, we'll just sort of will the program to each other. No. But I was doing it. I was trying to will it to the happy-faced lady with the thing on her lip. I was trying to will it to her to ask, why can't New York City remove snow? And I clicked, and I clicked, and I clicked, and I clicked. And finally, somebody on some channel said, well, you know, Tabitha, this year, the city of New York laid off 400 sanitation workers. And I wish I'd noted which network it was, because I would be crediting them right now. But here's the downside. That only got mentioned once. But I heard that, and my pink little ears perked up and went, yes! You can't remove the snow because the people who removed the snow were removed from their jobs. Because we gotta have austerity in America. And we gotta do some belt tightening. Now, bear in mind, of course, Manhattan had been cleared while Queens, Staten Island, Brooklyn, Yonkers, whatever, hadn't. New Jersey was still a mess, although there was footage of the Newark Mayor Cory Booker out there digging snow. But I looked up and I realized this is another one of those moments. I don't do retrospective shows, you know, the top 10 repig-licking screw-ups of 2010. God, how would you begin to cull that list? As I wrote in the show post that News Ninja Susan so kindly posted for me, history without perspective is mildewed masturbation. This isn't just about New York can't remove its snow. And to say that New York couldn't remove its snow because there was a lot of it is a cop-out of the worst kind. What this is, these are little breadcrumb trails to the collapse. These are parts of a larger story. And yeah, there is a retrospective element to this, but you don't do retrospective simply for retrospective purposes. You have to do it to see if there are some clues here, Watson! And there are, in abundance. Colorado towns that can't mow their grass. Cities in California that close their parks and close the public restrooms because they can't afford to have them cleaned or the garbage picked up anymore. A home that burns to the ground while the firefighters watch in rural Tennessee. A former fire marshal who dies in a house with no electricity and no running water after his pension was cut off. And the city that never sleeps can't clear a heavy snow. Now see, I understand the differences. For instance, if a 2-foot snow fell on Atlanta, Atlanta would be crippled. Because really, there is no economic sense in having an entire fleet of snow plows and salt trucks and salt domes and everything that goes with that to deal with something that happens once every 25 years. I experienced it growing up in the South. I'll never forget the night that we were snowed into CNN Center at the former Omni. And we were put up at the Omni Hotel. Because nobody could get home because an inch of ice had fallen on Atlanta. And WSB had reporters standing on overpasses reporting on the great ice storm of 1987. Back to you, Jim. That's understandable. But New York City ain't Atlanta. And it's not Miami. New York City is a relatively cold place. It's in what we call, down south, the North. Of course, there are places in the South that think Nashville is in the North. It's all relative. But snowfalls are not freak occurrences in New York City like they are in Atlanta or Birmingham. Birmingham, Alabama got its first white Christmas since record keeping began in something like 1880. The same cannot be said of New York City. You know, we have listeners in New York City, and I thought of them today and wondered how they were doing, how you are doing. Because that's the craziness of this program. I don't have a nameless, we don't have a nameless, faceless association with each other. I would hazard to say that that this is one of the most tight-knit communities of any radio show on the planet. And so I think about people. I got a message earlier today. She used to come into the chat room from time to time, from Blythe Rain. She lives in New York City, but her hairdresser's in Brooklyn. And she said, I'd really, really wanted to get a nice New Year's haircut, but there won't be no getting to Brooklyn now. She didn't say won't be no. She uses proper English. She's not hillbilly like me. And I think about our pals in Brooklyn, Manhattan, Queens, Staten Island. And the story as it was developing this morning on the morning vapidity. I think I invented a new word there, vapidity. Was that New Yorkers were the famously cranky New Yorkers were extra cranky at Mayor Bloomberg. Mayor Bloomberg's response was to get behind a microphone and tell people, well, complaining doesn't make it any better. Memo to Mayor Bloomberg. Yes, it does. It does, especially if the complaining is focused and targeted and has behind it logic, reason, and common sense. This is the same thing as the story about Pritchard, Alabama. This is the same thing as the story about the cities in Colorado. What is it, Boulder, Colorado? I can't remember the city in California. Maybe it was Sacramento. This is the same thing. This is the same thing as the house that burns down in Tennessee while the firefighters watch. This is direct evidence of the collapse of everything that we hold dear about America. You know, meanwhile, the goons over at Radio Rwanda are saying that government regulation caused all them troubles over to the JFK and the LaGuardia airports. No. Absence of an appropriate workforce and absence of appropriate equipment caused that. Because, you see, this is what happens when the bean counters get in charge of public safety and public welfare. You know, the general welfare, like is referenced in the Constitution. having enough snow plows and enough salt trucks and enough salt to deal with a fairly commonplace snow event, which really this was, well, that's a function of providing for the general welfare, isn't it? Now, I'm sure that Fat Tony Scalia and Slappy Thomas and Sammy the Lip Alito and that sort of dead-eyed John Roberts have all said, well, there weren't no internal combustion engine-driven snow plows when the Constitution was adopted, therefore it ain't in the Constitution. Can't be part of the general welfare. Weren't no snow plows. And that's one of those situations where you just look up and say, A, the stupid you will have always with you, and B, you can't fix it. You have to treat the stupid like MacArthur treated the islands in the Second World War. You don't necessarily attack them directly. You circumvent them and cut them off. There are some things that are not worth discussing with a right-winger. And yet, because we have the for-profit media out there, they are still treated as if they have something valuable to add to the conversation, which they don't. But for as much as they largely got it wrong, they did get it right in focusing on this story. And I draw a distinction here because most of the time when I see on one of these 24-hour news channels, oh, look, it's snowing in Miami. That's a non-story. Oh, look, it's snowing in Delaware. Non-story. Oh, look, it's snowing in Maine, Chicago, North Dakota. Non-story. But this one was a story. This one was a story. Because when New York City can't deal in an efficient manner with an ordinary snowfall, and really, come on, oh, it was, you know, 2 feet in 3 hours. No, it's just snow, and you prepare for it. One aggrieved interviewee said this morning, it's not like they didn't know this was coming. You get the salt trucks out on the road and get the roads salted before the snowflakes fly. That way they're melting when they hit the ground. And then as soon as you've got enough to plow, you plow. And you keep plowing. I mean, there's a lot of people in New York, but it's not that big an island. There's nothing insurmountable about this. Save for the fact that even in New York City, a place that I've barely ever visited, but which I do love, it's home to so many of the things that define civilization for me. From great pizza to great art. When New York City can't clear snow, that's when you get to key the microphone and say, Houston, we have a problem. Because we do. It's a big problem and a bad problem, and it's a problem that becomes exponential in nature. Because remember, when the bean counters say, well, you know, we could get rid of those 400 unionized sanitation workers, well, the right-wingers and the Grover Norquist say, yay! That's another inch off the top of government, and we'll soon be able to drown it in the bathtub. But see, that's the thing maybe we don't remember so good. When Grover Norquist says he wants to drown the government in the bathtub, what he means is he wants to drown you in the bathtub. Remember? We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, blah, 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 do establish this Constitution. Remember?
That means we're the government. That means we are literally who Grover Norquist wants to drown. Does anybody here think that the private sector could do a better job of snow removal? Snow removal is it's labor intensive, and it requires keeping an inventory of stuff that costs money that really doesn't yield any return save for the fact that life can go on as normal when it's needed. What private enterprise would do snow removal for what the city of New York could do it for? The answer? None. Because it is simply not profitable. Any more than for-profit-based subscription fire services are profitable. Just ain't. And that's New York. But then you can go a long way south to one of my other favorite cities on this continent. Dear, bedraggled, beaten up New Orleans. Where, as Bill Quigley reports at Facing South, 8 young homeless people died in a fire there because they were living in an abandoned warehouse by the tracks in the lower Ninth Ward. And they were trying to stay warm on a 0-degree night. And man, let me tell you, 0 degrees down on the Gulf Coast, it feels like 50 below anywhere else. Because it's 0 degrees and wet. But on a 0-degree night, they had a fire in a barrel in an abandoned warehouse. It got out of control. The warehouse burnt to the ground, and so did 8 young people. The New Orleans Fire Department says we don't know their IDs. They were so burned we can't even tell their genders. Bill Quigley says Audrey, a young woman with brown dreads and a Polish last name, arrived at the scorched scene. She had spent the night in the warehouse a couple of times. Because the last night was so cold, she and a few others begged money from people in the French Quarter and got enough to spend the night in a hotel. She was asked, "Do you know who was in there?" And she said, "Usually 10 to 15 people. Nobody uses last name but Katie, Jeff, Sammy, Nikki, John, and Mooncat usually stay there." She was sobbing by then. Bill Quigley goes on to note that there are an estimated 1.6 to 2.8 million homeless youth in the United States. By youth, we mean people between the ages of 12 and 24. Those are real numbers. They come from a report in June 2010 by the Center for American Progress. They're homeless because they've been abused. They're homeless because they've been neglected. They're homeless because their families were so horribly dysfunctional that the only thing they could do was take to the streets to avoid the nightmare of home. And then this little sentence, gay and transgender youth are strikingly overrepresented. Bill Quigley, who is legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights and a law professor at Loyola University of New Orleans, says at the end, "Nationally, the U.S. has severely cut its investment in affordable housing despite increasing need from the foreclosure and economic crises. Homelessness is, of course, up all over. The U.S. Conference of Mayors reported in December 2010 that demands for food and housing are up across the country. The causes? Unemployment, high housing costs, and low wages. He asks, will we look into our abandoned buildings and look into the eyes of our abandoned daughters and sons and sisters and brothers? Will our nation address unemployment, high housing costs, and low wages? Will we address the abuse, neglect, and family conflict that create homelessness for millions of youth, especially gay and transgender youth? Or will the fires continue and the lives end? I know the answer to that. I don't like the answer to that, but I know the answer to that. As long as anyone is paying attention to the likes of a vicious, misanthropic psychopath like Grover Norquist, the answer, will we look into our abandoned buildings and look into the eyes of our abandoned daughters and sons, sisters and brothers? No! Will our nation address unemployment, high housing costs, and low wages? No! Will we address the abuse, neglect, and family conflict that create homelessness for millions of youth, especially gay and transgendered youth? No! Or will the fires continue and the lives end? Oh, hell yes. Because Grover Norquist giggles a little bit every time a story like this comes out, because that means that's one more cell on the body politic that he has drowned in a bathtub. He is giggling his fool head off because he is a monster. And we had better figure out pretty damn quick what our priorities are. Warehouses burn because Republicans say we will hold the whole godforsaken country hostage until we get the tax cuts for the rich extended. New York can't plow its streets of simple snow because Republicans say we don't want them taking money out of our hard-earned wallets for them social programs. God, how I wish I was heard more broadly in a place like New York City. Because I would beg people to go to Gracie Mansion and bundle up and stay there, just like they did when it was freezing in the Baltic states and when it was freezing in Romania. Stay there! And don't leave until you get what you need. And what you need is a government that actually responds to people's needs. Do taxes need to go up? Maybe! They damn sure need to go up on the richest of the rich. Because they're paying practically nothing at all now. As a comparative function of the massive wealth that they hold and they hoard. Or we can do the other, we can go the opposite direction. You realize that the rich are still bitching about their tax rate, right? They think that even the tax cut that got extended for them, they're paying too much money. Well, that's just going to cut into our ability to create jobs. Let's cut it to zero. Let's cut the richest taxes to zero and give them little tattoos on their wrists and RFID chips inside their heads and say, we're going to count up now that you're paying no taxes. We are going to count up every damn job you create, and you better get to creating, you bastards. Because when you don't, we're going to put you in a warehouse. We're going to put you in a warehouse with Katie and Mooncat. And Jeff, and Sammy, and Nikki, and John. And we're going to let you try to stay warm on a zero-degree night. And when the building catches fire, we're not going to come get you. Then you can let your money save you. See, that's the problem. The rich in this country don't understand that they are in the same boat with us. They think we're in steerage and they're in first class. But it's all the same boat. New York streets get cleared because that's where the banksters operate. Because Goldman Sachs ain't in Brooklyn. And AIG ain't in Queens. Breadcrumbs. Breadcrumbs. Lots and lots of breadcrumbs. 20 minutes past the hour, and it's probably time to go to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Oh, I'm just kidding about burning the rich. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And you can also always reach the program by email, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. We'll be back after a little break. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
At the halfway point of tonight's program, this prayer meeting edition of The Horn, it's Wednesday. And a quick email before we go to the phones, coming from Andy in Redwood City. Having lived in both Boulder, concerning the Springs versus Boulder and Mayor Mike, having lived in both Boulder, Colorado, and Colorado Springs, Colorado, it is an affront to confuse the two. See, that's my geographic ignorance coming around again. I need to travel. Colorado Springs is where the Wingnuts live, the military, and a large population of religious evangelical freaks, the home of Ted Haggard. This is where the lights were turned off, sanitation services cut in the parks and around the city. Boulder is the home of an enlightened college community, and another town I used to work in, New York, which is run by a mayor that made his money screwing his employees, sucking about $12 billion out of Bloomberg LP. You don't get that kind of money without pushing your employees to the limit. His mantra has always been to crush the unions and deflect all calls for an enhanced minimum wage for the city's impoverished workforce. This man has absolutely no empathy for the working man and shows, working person, I would say, and shows no respect for the dignity of working people, none. He just wants a neoliberal class war to the bottom. Thanks. Right on, Bob. Colorado Springs and New York are emblematic of Grover Norquist's neoliberal policies of starving the beast. And there we go. The beast. You know, they say that, starve the beast, the right-wingers do, when in fact, we're the beast they want to starve. Kevin's in Seoul, and he says, these Ayn Rand and Grover Norquist devotees will not learn until professional kidnapping squads start to form like in the film Man on Fire. That is when it will hit home to these greedy, power-hungry bastards. I hope the failure of the third Bloomberg administration to shovel snow in New York City will show this bastard the people don't have to do a bloody thing. Nature has a way of putting their power in check. Tolstoy and Lenin alone did not cause the Russian Revolution. Much of the revolution was caused by the abnormally freezing winters of 1916 to 1920 and the Great Flu epidemic. Maybe the American people are right to stay home and do nothing and let nature run its course. If we do not communicate between today and the turn of the new year, says Kevin, to me and to all of you, have a happy and blessed one to all the Horn family. Your friend and comrade always, Kevin in Seoul. And by the way, what's the song, Land of the Last song? Who is it by? Not the XTC song, but the one before that. That was Wrecking Ball by Emmylou Harris. Haunting, isn't it? And William says, I spent half my life in Illinois. It snowed there. We at one point lived out in the farmlands, and even there the garbage trucks had plows. Amtrak shut down in New York. I recall the old passenger trains. CNNW had plows and cleared the tracks in that manner. The trains never shut down. At this point in time, I really wonder what the result would be if here in California we had a major earthquake. It wouldn't be like the one in 1994 when things did work. Where are we? Answer, Haiti with cable. Really, not kidding. And to the phones. Let's see. That button. Hey, welcome to the program. Sandra.
Yeah, he also, Mayor, whatever, Berlusconi in the West, my God. Anyway, he also blamed some of the citizens for this. I mean, this guy is so disgusting, and he was completely revealed in this. I mean, the first thing he said was, oh, the world has not come to an end, the city is going fine.
And quit complaining.
Broadway shows are full last night. There are a lot of tourists here. Tourists ain't voting in New York, thank you.
Yeah, and you know what? Broadway ain't in Queens.
No, and people are stranded and they can't go who live there. This guy, listen, I do think he should be careful because these are the sort of things that will F up a politician. People ain't hearing it. And I heard later he came out trying to take the blame. He is such a plutocrat. He is so disgusting. I mean, I can't even, I'm not surprised by his response, but he is so full of himself and so defensive, but he ain't read much city political history. You don't act that way during snow. People don't like it. Look at this bitch who went to Florida who didn't come back.
By the way, has anybody found Chris Christie yet?
That's what I'm talking about, that fool. And it's just kind of like, hello? I don't know. I'm thinking they laid off.
You know, but no, seriously, does Jersey have the right of recall?
I don't know. This guy, he's terrible. I mean, if this gives people an excuse to rally around and get rid of him, all the better, because he's systematically dismantling any public anything in New Jersey. It's horrible. And no, you know, it won't raise taxes on the millionaires in New Jersey. But the Bloomberg thing is what, you know, he's so, I always knew he was really foul, and to come out complaining and being defensive, that's a no-no in a big snowstorm.
Oh yeah, I mean, this is on a par, well, no, it's not. But it's somehow similar to, you know, everybody said Rudy Giuliani was such a leader on September 11th. But it turns out that Rudy Giuliani was the one who screwed up the radio buy so that the firefighters could talk to the EMS, could talk to the cops.
Yeah, so he can front. Yeah, he messed it up big time. But, I mean, this is just sort of, you know, because people are already on edge with this mayor because of how he engineered an unprecedented third term. You know, it's like a little...
Yeah, bought and paid for.
Yeah, and it's just the way he operates. So... And the whole idea, they cut 400 sanitary workers. Oh, no, that got nothing to do with it, right? I mean, please.
Well, what did they expect? The snowplow fairy to make the stuff go away? I mean,
it's incredible. It's like, yeah, you know, you can't decimate the public sector in that regard because a for-profit company ain't going to make a profit. That's why you have public services. I mean, you make a great point with the Norquist talking about drowning government because, yeah, government idiots, that's us. You know what I mean?
And lest I be taken as being critical of New York City only, listen, I mean, I live in an area here in Appalachia, very, very rural, let's see, if we say somebody's urban and we mean they're black, when we say I'm very, very rural, does that mean I'm really, really pink? I think so.
Yeah.
You know, because I am. But, yeah, I'm very rural. And yet this place used to have, well, I mean, my road, and I don't live far from the main road, my road has never been plowed. It sits with snow on it, and if you can get out, get out. And if you can't, don't. And it's a winding, snakes-backy kind of thing that looks like it was laid out by a stumbling drunk. And it doesn't get plowed. But you know what? A generation ago, it did. And a generation ago, school wasn't called off every time two flakes fell. But now, it is, because the roads can't be cleared. And the buses can't run.
Well, it's incredible, the whole train thing, when all you have to do is attach something on the damn train. I mean, it's... like your emailer said, it's just unheard of, and the trains don't usually stop, you know? And all of this is just the total destruction of the commons and what services people are taxed. We're taxed so much, you know, with the sales tax and the city taxes and on and on and on, and yet we're not supposed to expect any sort of service. And remember that tree that fell and killed that lady in Central Park?
Yep.
Don't tell me that that wasn't related to the fact that they farmed off that service to some private entity who's only responsible to the public, who means nothing. So why should they bother? And what happened? Some child died, right?
Yeah.
And they're trying to walk around that. But that's more of the same. Because they didn't prune the damn trees like they used to all the time when they had people who work for the city doing it. I mean, what else, you know, what is it going to take? I guess it's just...
And yet, are the American people, Sandra, so childish, so childlike, that if you say, listen, you know, we're going to have to raise taxes, declaration of war? Are we still there? Do we have to slide further down before we realize, or at this point, is the messaging so thoroughly completely successful on the part of the right wing that everybody just says, well, see, government don't work?
Well, you got Obama trying to justify the tax increases. That's enough for me to see. And it's because, are you kidding? You know, there's nowhere for reason to be articulated anymore, and we got big problems. Because, you know, he is a she ought to be ashamed of himself trying to justify that shit. And there he was doing just that, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Him and a Democratic Party, let's just say that. I'm not going to isolate him. The Democratic Party, since they embraced the extension of the tax cuts, were out there justifying it along with their various progressive minions. And it's just like, are you kidding? Huh? What? So you can't have it both ways. That's just the fact. And Americans are trying to exist having it both ways, and then they get up in arms when they can't come out the damn door because the snow is up to it. You see what I mean?
Yep.
And make the connections, you know. Start making the connections, folks.
And that's, you know, that's what I'm talking about, with a little breadcrumb trail.
Oh, it's incredible. And I read the Quigley guy. That was heartbreaking. I'm thinking, wow, 1.8 million young people? Is that what that number was for the homeless?
Well, that's the low end, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing that also killed me about that article was, did you notice the train hopping? I'm sorry to flip back to 1930, but...
I did notice that, and they said, you know, a lot of the people who stay in this warehouse are hopping freights, and they're in between freights.
Yeah, and I couldn't help but think, oh, wow.
Really? We're back there? I didn't know you could still do that.
And, you know, coming up real soon, the poor houses. I mean, the real ones. Before Social Security, we had the poor houses. And is that coming up next? I mean, we already...
Oh, did you see that article, too?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was just like, hello?
The one over at Huffington Post that used the chronicle of Aunt Winnie?
Right, right. No. It's just sort of... it's scary, especially if you look at the food stamp use as replacing the soup lines, which is its function, if you want to tie it all into, you know, Depression era type.
Yeah. And you know, I got a really nice distillation. A New Yorker wrote to me earlier today on my Facebook page, an old friend of mine, disagreeing with my assertion that the reason Manhattan is clear is because that's where the banksters need the road to be clear. you know, because, like I said, Goldman Sachs ain't in Brooklyn, and AIG ain't in Queens.
Well, that's why when the responders, I'm sorry to tie that in, they wanted that cleared up too, didn't they?
Yep.
Well, anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, but he said, earlier today, he said, I agree that budgetary cutbacks are devastating. California's budget problems happen to be linked to their true democracy that allows for voters to pass concurrent contradictory measures and apparently civil rights. Everyone wants lower taxes and great public works and for the state to balance its budget every year. The problem is that the only way to make your cake, have it, and eat it too in California is to bankrupt the state's endowment fund, which is exactly what happened. What pisses me off about New York, our buddy Matt says, is that we can't afford to use those 400 sanitation workers, but we have all kinds of money to throw away on a new Yankee stadium and not even give the city or state any ownership of said stadium. And, you know, there we go again.
Right. I mean, not only do they want the tax cuts, but they also want the public to pay for their toys that they won't allow the said public in. I mean, that to me is just a beyond, you know, $2,000 for a Yankee ticket. Sorry, idiots, you can't come.
I mean, I love me some baseball, but...
Well, yeah, but, they're not accessible to folks.
No.
In California, this state, I guess, is, you know, teetering once again, you know, the whole chit-chat about it going bankrupt, you know what I mean? And, the whole idea that the bondholders are second in line after education, and mind you, I didn't know that California had put anyone ahead of the bondholders, which I think is kind of interesting, because if they can put education ahead of them bitches, they can put other people.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't know. I just was sort of, I was so disturbed by that New Orleans stuff, though. It made me sick, and I just felt, you know, just so sad. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, the just those little babies, you know?
I know.
Anybody under 24 roaming around is a baby, okay? I'm just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and as Quigley notes, the disproportionate overrepresentation of the gay and transgendered community.
Yeah, no, that stuck out too, and I thought, well, yeah.
What we're talking about here, I mean, let's quit mincing words. We are talking about a death sentence. That the entirety of the United States, or enough of the United States to constitute a quorum, I suppose, we're talking about a death sentence imposed by that group, just because, you know, we don't care about them that much.
That's the thing. It's sort of, you know, the real life consequences of the plutocrats and the constant denigration of government and deficits and austerity all translate into a shitstorm for the majority of working people. I don't even know. And, you know, I'm just sort of living in fear of this new Congress coming up and, you know, Bubble Obama strutting around. I'm like, what's he strutting for, you know?
No, because, you know, the lame duck wasn't quite so lame.
Yeah, but I don't, you know.
And you know, there were the numbers out today, and again, it's the horse racization of American politics, Sandra. The numbers on which teabaggers and repiglicans favor which potential candidates, that televangelist Mike Huckabee comes in at the top of the heap, then Mitt Romney, and then Newt Gingrich, and then Godzilla from Wasilla.
Well, yeah, I mean...
No mention of Jebby, still flying under the radar.
Yeah, because every time you read that list, I just think, well, you know, Obama can practically damn near cut Social Security and still win if he runs against that lot. I'm sorry. You know, maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think you are, because I looked at it and I thought the same thing.
Well, see, but that doesn't bode well for us, because, see, once...
No.
I'm operating... as if forces are aligned against me and my friends, there's nothing good out there that's working on our behalf. So when I see Obama not potentially facing someone who, some of these clowns, I get more scared that he's going to implement his beloved central DLC Hamilton project neoliberalism. he's going to be able to implement everything he wants. So I'm waiting for some reasonable Republican to step up. I know that sounds crazy, Bob, and it's not like I'm going to vote for him, but I just don't want this fool to announce at the State of the Union, oh, people, we have to make sacrifices. You know, we always have to make sacrifices. And entitlement reform, that Reaganistic type of chit-chat that he's prone to. And
but what's funny out of that is that there's already somebody, and the somebody who's doing it is crazier than a sprayed roach, beating him to the punch. Did you see this business from Tom Coburn?
Well, what's he saying?
I'm rolling down to it now. It happened, you know, kind of over the weekend or whatever.
Was that same freak who was blocking the 9/11 thing until he got shamed, or is this a different one?
No, this is the same one. This is crazy-ass Tom Coburn from Oklahoma.
And he's a doctor, too. Every time I think about that, I think...
Oh, this is the guy who was... Yeah, this is the guy who was elected to the Senate in Oklahoma on the backs of young lesbians. No, really. Because he declared that he had to go to, the first time he ran, he had to go to the Senate because there was an outbreak of lesbianism in Oklahoma's middle school. Really. Not kidding.
Okay, that's...
Yeah, sickening. But he showed up on Fox News Sunday this past Sunday, after the extension of the Bush tax cuts, and he said the following. You know, once again, he's talking about where we can cut the budget. Cut the budget, cut the budget, cut the budget. And he said, we could certainly cut the budget 100 to 200 billion and help ourselves. There cannot be anything. And see, this is important because this is going to be where America finds out that Republicans and Democrats can get along. There cannot be anything that's put on the table, that's not put on the table. There will not be one American that will not be called upon to sacrifice. This is the important part, Sandra. Those that are more well-to-do will be called on to sacrifice to a greater extent. Really?
When?
Certainly not in forms of the taxes that they actually pay to support the government that carries their dead asses.
When? I mean, they can't even agree to cut loopholes for companies that ship jobs over, which is, a win-win for 98% of us, yet... They couldn't do that, so...
Yeah, but 98% of America, or, that quorum, I won't go that far, because there's a goodly-sized few million of us intelligent people, but there's a whole bunch of America that will hear Coburn prattle something like that and say, that's what we need, a real leader.
Well, I mean, no, but the thing that's so crazy in the political chit-chat is these people should not be able to even utter... cutting deficits or anything after what they did. But because they got the Democrats to go along with this madness, you see how it pushes the pulse now?
Right. And there's a different, when he says everybody will be touched and everybody's going to have to sacrifice. Well, see, the sacrifice is a relative scale, Sandra. There's the kids in the warehouse who sacrifice their lives.
Right.
There's the kid that, there's people who have what we euphemistically call food insecurity issues now, and they're sacrificing lunch and breakfast and a roof over their heads. And then there's the people who just got the renewal of the Bush tax cuts, and they might sacrifice lobster lunches 2 days a week.
Well, I mean,
but everybody's sacrificing.
No, but it's interesting. I don't know if you saw this, but they are now about to alter. Or brace yourself, the way they report unemployment because the shit is so bad. They're about to increase from 2 years to 5 years of joblessness to try to understand the real impact of the unemployment situation.
So that'll drive the numbers down, right?
No. It will bring some reality to it. But my thing is, this number hasn't been altered in 33 years. So...
Yeah, not since Reagan added the military to it.
Well, and it's just sort of, it's like, hello, that's how bad, I hate to keep comparing stuff to the Great Depression, but, of course, for brown people, it's already, the numbers are already depression level, and also the prices keep falling, that now they're saying it's a double dip price and falling prices for homes, Bob. We're in that situation, and some people have predicted 70 to 90% drop when the whole thing is said and done. And the lowest it hit during the Depression was 50% in some markets. It's already 41%.
And there's stuff that there's stuff that all wraps together in this too. You know, there are no there's no such thing, I think, as an isolated statistic, because everything is influenced by other things. It's the view of the world as a web as opposed to a line. And in this particular case, there was much Sturm und Drang on the TV morning news babble a couple of days ago about this former CEO of Shell who says that by next year gas will be $5 a gallon.
Oh, well, you know, the prices, I mean, I mentioned that to you, I think, a couple of weeks ago. I said, oh, shit, it's, you know, hitting towards 100, and now it's over 90. And now there's a good chance that we'll be back at the, you know, four. Now, do you think that, I mean, I bet if we got prices over $4, all this is within the, what year? 2012. What's going on then? Goddamn elections. I mean, I just don't even know what to think. The gas thing is really scary, because that's a sure way.
And you mentioned, you know, you mentioned home devaluation and stuff. Again, I'm no economist, and I don't play one on the radio. But based on my understanding, inflation is a worry. Wasn't that the worry that drove us to, you know, try to, you know, we got to address the deficit because of inflation? Wasn't that trope?
Well, yeah.
But if we're talking about home values falling through the floor, that ain't inflation. That's deflation, isn't it?
Well,
and that's the real nightmare.
Yeah, the worst housing poverty bubble ever in the history of the world was in the 14th century in Italy, where it dropped 50%. And we're, you know, that's, you know, so I'm sorry to go all the way back there, but I just thought that was an interesting period that people are now comparing this to, you know?
Yeah, and apparently your mention of Bloomberg touched a nerve with a lot of folks. Paul just wrote in and said, somebody tweeted earlier today, want to get Bloomberg to do something about the snow? Tell him people are enjoying it.
Shut the heck. Ain't that the truth? He is so, listen, he has to be the worst, and like I wrote to you, thank God he's 5'1", because he ain't going to be president.
No.
Okay? I mean, hella sure. I looked at him, I said, oh, snap, you ain't going to be president.
Wait, are you sneezy, grumpy, or Doc?
It's like Napoleon revisited with this fool. But anyway, I don't, you know, no offense to short men.
No, I understand. But no, it's a political reality.
That's true.
You could, you know, the American, there's that word again. It must be vapid Wednesday. The American electorate are so vapid you can tell who's going to win a presidential election by height and number of syllables in name.
Well, yeah, I remember reading that too. I thought that was hella funny. But the height has been proven over and over again. I mean, and I just was, you know, I was kind of worried about Bloomberg until I got a good gander. I thought, oh, shit, that ain't happening.
Well, and the same goes for Mike Huckabee. And, you know, but that, again, I go back to that, you know, it's 68%. That was the number. 68% favored Mike Huckabee. And everybody else came down from there. Then it was, you know, Willard Romney. Then it was Newt. Then it, and I, but I swear, you know, I don't know why, Sandra, but there's never any mention of Jeb Bush.
Well,
and the poll, but the funny thing is, I understand that out of the for-profit media, but even the polling companies aren't asking the question.
No, but there are little articles about how popular the Bush book is. I thought that was kind of interesting. It sold, like, you know, as much as Clinton's book sold over the last 6 years. It's already sold more copies.
Now, and I read the Clinton book. I got to imagine the Bush book would actually be a more enjoyable read because there'd be several spit takes per page.
Yeah, well, no, but also it's cheaper. That was one of the possible reasoning. But the thing about it is, I think it'll be really hard-pressed for Obama not to be reelected. But when we talk about these economic numbers, though, that's problematic for him. $5 a gallon gas, or even $4, because it's already over $3 here in California. It's already creeping up.
And oh, I know. Believe me, I know. I just paid $3.20 a gallon.
Oh, over on your way is that expensive too, huh?
Yeah, and that's in the rusty red pickup truck that gets 11 miles per.
Because there's nothing economic killing more than the when gas prices go up in this country, because, you know, it's just a direct hit. If you have to go to work, you make $8 an hour, and all of a sudden you have to spend $20 more on your tank. Well, you can understand that's a problem.
Shoot.
So if that's the sort of storms that are gathering for him, he could lose on the strength of that.
And again, one of the things I fear, because the retrospective on Bill Clinton, for instance, is what kind of president would Bill Clinton have been in his second term in office if he had not had to deal with a hidebound, rock-ribbed, right-wing Republican in Congress? And I fear, you know, that with Barack Obama, it's going to be the same question. Oh, he would have been a great reformer, but... And I forget who it was the other day that I was reading that said, you know, I'm so proud of what happened with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but it doesn't touch the struggles of the working class.
Exactly.
And I'm so proud of the Lilly Ledbetter Act, but it has very tangential, at best, impact on the working class.
Right. Well, this just goes along with my whole theory of the, you know, new normal, the permanent underclass that so many middle class people are falling into, where there's no bottom to it.
And that's the kind of thing that makes people like Dean Baker sit up at 3 o'clock in the morning with the sweat rolling off his head.
Well, yeah, and it should be with anybody who wants to maintain a democracy should be losing sleep at night, because that system isn't going to last. You can't have. I can't tell you how many of these statistics are doing my head in. You know, 50 million people in poverty, 60 million without health care, 1 in 7 on food stamps, 1 in 5 children in poverty. I mean,
1 in 10 in prison.
Come the hell on. I mean, these numbers are just shocking, and it's just rolling off the backs of these politicians who can't even talk about poor. I never hear Obama talking about the poor. Everything is middle class, which is...
No, but God forbid he mentions Michael Vick.
Well...
I mean, that is... Do you realize, Sandra? I mean, that, you know, you mentioned that to me on Monday's program, and it is still going on.
Exactly.
And the Ed Rendell comment about the Eagles-Vikings game not being played is still going on. Poor Nora O'Donnell on MSNBC this morning, I think she mentioned it 5 times. Oh, that Ed Rendell, he certainly created the paradigm for...
Listen, I mean, I keep hoping that David from Maine will call and give us his astute commentary about that shit, because it's incredible that this is going on and on and on, the Michael Vick thing. Tucker Carlson.
That's the latest. David in Tennessee was telling me about it. I hadn't even seen it. Tucker Carlson wants, did I understand this right? Says Michael Vick should have been executed?
Right. I mean, it's just, hello? I mean, I'm starting to, you know, the whole thing with the Michael Vick is just beyond irrational, if you keep in mind that one football player, Stallworth, ran over a damn person and killed him and got 30 days. So, I'm sorry. I am, like, not feeling someone who went to Leavenworth. Leavenworth. Please, Jesus.
And well, the poll quote from Tucker Carlson is frankly stunning. He says, now I'm a Christian. I've made mistakes myself. Really? Like spoofing Keith Olbermann's... the email address and actually engaging in fraud? Never mind. I've made mistakes myself. I believe fervently in second chances, but Michael Vick killed dogs, and he did it in a heartless and cruel way, and I think personally he should have been executed for that.
Okay.
But the idea, but here's the killer. Well, probably bad work. Here's the kicker. But the idea that the President of the United States would be getting behind someone who murdered dogs kind of beyond the pale. Well, you know, here's a little legal lesson for Tucker Carlson. You can't murder a dog. Now, I'm not being insensitive. I love dogs. I love our dogs. I love lots of dogs. But legally speaking, you can't murder a dog, because murder is defined as the premeditated killing of another human being. I don't care how many cans of paint PETA throws on how many fur coats. Fur ain't murder.
Yeah, no, this is incredible, and especially coming out of these people, they need to shut up when they talk about who deserves to be what based on what. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand the whole Vic thing anyway anymore.
Well, the idea that Tucker Carlson could even say make those words come out of his mouth when he routinely defends a president who unleashed rains of just firestorms of death.
Well, exactly.
On a million people.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. And, yeah, I suppose he has nothing to say for Private Manning, who's being held, hasn't been charged, and he's tortured. Nothing for him, right?
No. Tucker Carlson's got no love in his heart for, no.
But President, the black president shouldn't be calling another Negro, talking about him in any way. See, that's my thing. I just think, you know, when there's more than one black man, you know, and it's more just black men together in any capacity here, these white people lose their minds.
Oh, get real scared.
You know, and I think there's a little bit.
But it goes beyond that. Today, yesterday, and today, it was President Obama is on vacation in Hawaii. They always emphasize Hawaii.
Yeah, but as he said, rightfully so, he's going home. And I was just like, damn, when they gonna let that go? Anyway, I'm sorry.
And today he had Hawaiian shaved ice. And then they went into detailed analysis of Hawaiian shaved ice, and they said, and of course the shaved ice he had was melon flavored. Now see, I'm tuned into the code.
Oh God, who said that?
It was either Chicken Noodle News or MSNBC.
Wow. I mean, I know this period between Christmas and New Year's is like the dead for news and stuff.
We don't seem to be having a problem.
No, it's been pretty bad. I think I don't know if you saw this. I wanted to send the link to you. You should check it out if you didn't see it. But Democracy Now had this absolutely amazing segment on the storms and climate change. I'll send it to you because it just was this doctor who's writing about our health and climate change. He started talking about beetles and, you know, the sort of diseases that are coming, the sort of snow.
I did see that, and I checked the transcript a little bit, and it was just mind-boggling.
I was like, we're looking at that. For some reason, at 5 in the morning, I looked at that, I thought, oh, dear God. You know, it just was.
Yeah, isn't your mind just in a weird place at 5 a.m.?
No, and I'm always up because I'm just that kind of I'm always, you know, morning. I get everything done then. But it's just, I just thought that, well, if you've seen it, then you know what I'm talking about.
And conversely, anyway. I saw, I'll finish this and let you go. I saw a posting today over at the It's Getting Hot in Here blog, which is a great climate change blog. And it was someone writing about movement building. And I got to tell you, Sandra, and I'm not trying to be overly negative. I'm tired of movement building. I'm sick and tired of movement building. Because all the effort goes into the movement building, and then people sit around and go, why didn't anybody show up for our movement building? And I'm not trying to be mean here, but I posted on it. It had two comments. I don't know if they published mine or not. I didn't go back and look. But I went all the way through, and, you know, it's talking about youth movement building, and there's a really, really significant effort to do all of this, and, you know, they want millions of people in the streets. And yet there was not one word, you know, the disastrous effects of climate change, but it's always talked about in those terms as compared to what the guy, the scientist said on Democracy Now, and as compared to how I and many of my colleagues approach it. And that is, you know what, as long as you're talking about it in esoteric terms, it ain't going to happen. And I go back to my smart-ass little remark about how I don't have any interest in saving the planet for the 6-foot-tall race of sentient cockroaches that will follow us 20 million years from now. I don't have time. It only matters if we're talking about what it does to people.
Yeah, well, that's why I I don't want to say enjoyed, but found that segment on Democracy Now! Quite informative. I was like, good Jesus.
Yet because it had a human impact.
Right. It was starkly presented, and there was no flim-flammy movement building. thing, like you just said, which I agree. Anyway, yeah.
Well, I will let you get to it, but it's been a great conversation.
Yeah, listen, have a good holiday.
All right, you too. Happy New Year.
Bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, first thing is, I just can't understand why people are paying so much attention to Obama having shaved ice of a certain flavor, and also Obama carrying Reagan's biography with him, which they showed I don't know how many times. And it would appear to me as though Obama has more things on his plate than to even mention Michael Vick. I mean, to me, Michael Vick is a non-issue.
You know, that's just his attempt to be to show people that he's not 100% pure, unmitigated policy wonk, that he's paying attention to the popular culture stuff. That's all that is.
Oh, was that it?
Yeah. Meanwhile, his melon-flavored shaved ice, you know, you speak the code, too. And you know what that's about. But it's just evidence that, you know, they spent a minute and 45 seconds on, or 2.5 minutes, on Obama's vacation in Hawaii.
Well, number one, he shouldn't be in Hawaii. He should be back in Washington trying to do his job. And number two, there are so many things wrong with this idiot, and so many things that he failed to do when he could have done it. And there are so many people that he has thrown under the bus, and, you know, I'm just thoroughly disgusted with him. And, you know, that's just the way I feel about President Barack Obama.
Well, I won't criticize a man for going on a holiday break. He still hasn't begun to even remotely approach the amount of time that George Bush spent on vacation.
Well, I will, particularly if he came to office pledging that he would be there for the American people, unlike his predecessor was, and that was what the implications were. Yes, I do criticize him for doing this vacation business. I'm sorry, I don't agree with you there.
Well, but, you know, what would you have of him? Congress isn't in session.
What is wrong with him going to Camp David?
It ain't home.
I don't care. He is president of the United States. That's his retreat. That's just my opinion, okay?
All right, that's fine.
And also, what about Bill Clinton supporting Rahm Emanuel?
Yeah, that's pretty sickening. But it's not surprising. They're old buddies.
Well, yeah. But Rahm Emanuel is one of the reasons the Democratic Party is in its such a bad shape that it is today.
Right, because his philosophy won out over that of Howard Dean.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I mean, these people are just deserting the ship. They have their fortunes, they have their security, and they don't care about anybody else who doesn't have theirs. You know, that's just the attitude they're taking. And you've got these Democrats like Rahm Emanuel, who obviously is a careerist. He was wrong in abandoning the 50-state strategy espoused by Howard Dean. You see where it's gotten us, and the Democratic Party is falling apart. And going back to the earlier parts of your program about infrastructure, have you been over the Verrazano Narrows Bridge lately?
Never.
Well, you go over it, you look out your car window, you can see the water beneath it for the holes in it there. There are people who will not travel that bridge anymore. And all this thing was...
And that used to be an engineering wonder of the world, didn't it?
Well, yes, it was at one time, back in the 30s, 40s when it was built, or 20s, probably. I think late 20s, early 30s. But, I mean, what I'm trying to tell you is all this is tied into the infrastructure thing that I've harped on so many times on this program before. Infrastructure deals with not only the maintenance of facilities, but the ability for these facilities to be cleared, taken care of, and for people to be able to use them when snow falls. And I'll go you one further. Back in Sandra's hometown of Sacramento, next to New Orleans, it's below zero as far as sea level is concerned. And if you take a listen about the dike system out there in Sacramento and what would happen if they should have an earthquake enough to dislodge those things, Sacramento would be underwater.
I didn't realize that. That's disconcerting, to say the least.
Well, it's been there for a long time, and I mentioned it earlier on this program last year. We talked about it when I gave you the report. Remember the report I gave you?
I didn't remember Sacramento being below sea level.
Sacramento, next to New Orleans, is one of the most vulnerable cities in the country as far as flooding is concerned, if dikes should go. And the dikes are not being properly maintained. They don't have the money, and the money is not being spent. Even if they had it, I don't know if they would spend it for it, but it is extremely vulnerable.
The whole country is, isn't it, Jim?
Got people riding the rails now. And you've got, at the high end, what, 2.4 million youth that are on the streets? I've seen some of the documentaries on Logo on the gay town about some of these situations with gay and transgendered youth and the vulnerabilities they face in the big cities and things of that nature. It's heartrending. It really is. And the wealthiest, most powerful superpower in the world, we have people that are approaching what was occurring in the early 1930s in this country. What we're heading for is a major depression. And I don't see any FDR coming around to try to rescue it or to even try to put in stopgap measures the way FDR did. I just don't see it coming from the upcoming...
I don't think the American empire admits of an FDR any longer, Jim.
Do you think they're ashamed of him?
No.
So?
No, I don't think it is possible for an FDR to exist inside the political structure of the American empire.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You don't have people of that compassion and that devotion to public service in the government anymore, or running for high office. What they're running for is to, in my opinion, fatten their own wallets, and there's a program out there that will enhance their own particular situation. They might support that. Like I say, it all goes back to K Street and Wall Street, which I said years ago. And that's where it's all coming from, in my opinion. Now, that's my coup de raison, and maybe it may be overly simplistic. But I think the results, whether you look at it in particular the way you have tonight, or whether you just look at it in the broad spectrum the way I'm presenting it now, the results are just the same and just as devastating.
And the question, it's all academic, unless we can answer the question that flows from it, is it possible for the American people to actually give enough of a damn about their own country to change it?
The only time they're going to give a damn about it is when it begins to affect them personally. And the trouble is, it has begun to affect them personally, but yet they just don't realize it. I mean, they're too busy worrying about Michael Vick and what Barack is doing during his vacation. And
now, see, I don't think that's the American people, Jim. Well, that is the for-profit media feeding that pablum to the American people. The American people have proven themselves capable of addressing serious issues, but nobody's an individual news organization.
I hope you're right, but I'm talking about, really, more than the American people, the quality of the visual pablum that is being fed to the American people, which definitely has had some type of influence upon their views and their latitude. Would you not agree with that?
I believe I would.
Well, there's no, we're not talking in the conditional tense here. It's either yes or no. And I think it's yes. They're being led down the primrose path to destruction, and the emphasis is on the wrong syllable across the entire spectrum of the board.
Ultimately, the real world answer to problems like the pension in Pritchard, Alabama, and the inability to plow snow in New York, and the horrors of the fire in New Orleans, and Colorado Springs can't mow its grass, the answers to all of these things lie in the fact that taxation has been demonized, government has been demonized, to the point that it is literally, you know, they used to say that talking about Social Security was the political third rail in this country. Well, it's been proven that it isn't anymore. But what is the third rail now in this country is talking to the American people in frank, open, honest, candid terms about the fact that it takes money for the government to be able to do the things that the government must if the people want there to be a government at all.
But you see, the current leadership, whether it's in the Supreme Court, whether it's in the White House, or it's on Capitol Hill, they're not willing to do that. They are unwilling to do it. They could do it, but they won't. And the reason they won't do it is because it's not in their best personal interest. Now, maybe I'm being overly simplistic, but that's just the way I see it. You know, I have begun to see things in terms of black and white, not gray and green. I used to see things in terms of gray and green, but now I'm beginning to see them in terms of black and white. And you've got people there who are representing us, supposedly, but they're representing their own interests. And you've got a president up there who is kowtowing to people who absolutely hate his guts and can't wait to see him being made a fool of, and he is giving them ammunition every day to do it. And I cannot believe a man as intelligent as he is not aware of what is really going on.
I think he is.
Well, I think that's...
I think he is. I mean, look, let's just have an example here.
I think the man is a quisling, and he's a traitor, and he is a renegade.
Do you remember the hissy fit that the for-profit media threw when Barack Obama said that the police in Cambridge, Mass. Were stupid for arresting Henry Louis Gates? I mean, they went absolutely berserk. How dare he say that about America's fine uniformed police forces? Blah, 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 blah. But what they did, as usual, is they cut off the clip. Because the rest of the clip is, those guys were stupid for arresting a man who clearly told them he was in his own home. Now, there's a big difference between the cops are stupid and the cops are stupid who arrest a guy who's proven he's in his own home. There's a huge difference. But the for-profit media couldn't find a way to make that gin up for 2 weeks of the vapid news cycle. So instead, they just worked their own angle, and it caught it as the phraseology goes in this era. It went viral. President says cops stupid.
Well, here's the thing, Bob. They're going to use anything they possibly can because they did not want him to be there in the first place. And like the Pope became a prisoner in the Vatican in 1870, Obama has become a prisoner in the White House in the year 2010.
I mean, you know, we talk about the silliness of the for-profit media. You know, one of the things that MSNBC does in the morning now, they tell people what the soup of the day is in the White House kitchen.
Really?
Yeah, yesterday it was miso. Today it was asparagus with feta.
What does that tell you? What does that tell you? They're trying to divert the interest and the intelligence of the American people away from the problems that are really beating their doors down. They're not at the door. They're beating the doors down.
But if you were to ask some morning news managing editor at one of these news outlets, Jim, why do you run that simpleton crap? He would say, well, that's what the American people want. The American people don't want to get up in the morning and hear what a disaster their country is in because the day is just beginning.
During the first, you know, the Titanic hit the iceberg at 11:40, and it wasn't until 12:30 that people were beginning to realize what the terrible situation they were in. And they were hoping against hope until hope became hope abandoned. And that's exactly what's happened in this country. And that's the reason I sent you that email a couple days ago or weeks ago
Right, and as a consequence, what we have now is a for-profit media that is actively engaged in a frantic rearranging of the deck chairs.
Yeah, and how many times have I heard you use that particular phrase, rearranging the deck chairs on the first-class promenade of the RMS Titanic? How many times?
And yet they persist.
Yeah, they persist because it's the easiest thing to do. They don't want to ruffle feathers, and they don't want to make the American people, the American electorate, realize exactly what a precarious situation they are in. And the fact that we are about to destroy any social contract that existed between the government and the American people that it's supposed to represent, the fact that you've got people up there who, as you say, want it all, and people who simply don't care because they only care about the I, here, me, and now, and they really don't care about what comes after.
And just to expand on the issue of vacations we were talking about earlier, I got a chat from John Fox here, and he's telling me that, you know, in New Jersey, with this so-called snow emergency that they didn't declare, in New Jersey, the lieutenant governor is with ill family in Mexico. Okay, I can live with that. But still, Chris Christie, this confrontational thug of a teabagger, well, he's on vacation. He really is on vacation. He went to Florida, and you know, it's like when the governor of South Carolina went hiking the Appalachian Trail.
You know, Bob, there's an old verse from a guy named Mose Allison. You ever hear of Mose Allison?
Yep.
And he said, if talk was criminal, they'd lead a life of crime because their minds are on vacation and their mouths are working overtime.
Hear, hear.
Now, that's the way I...
And by the way, just to clear things up, David in Tennessee letting me know, Barack Obama did not, of his own accord, mention Michael Vick to the media himself. The whole thing started out with a private conversation between him and the Eagles owner.
Well, it sure got carried out, and he sure...
And then, well, wait. I mean, let's have all our facts. Then, that private conversation was bruited to the world by Mr. Lurie, who owns the Eagles.
You know what I would have done if I had been President Obama? I would have said, I have more and better things to deal with than Michael Vick. End of story.
No, but that's the point. At that point, you know, it's not like he went into the White House press room and said, you know, I just wanted to tell you what my thoughts are on Michael Vick. Once again, the for-profit media took half a story and ran wild with it.
Well, they ran wild with it because they were talking about, and what they tried to play with it is the spirit of the president's attitude to forgiveness and redemption.
But underneath that, just like them mentioning that his shaved ice was melon-flavored, was what Sandra pointed out, the fact that, here's one black, can't have two black men in the room without white America having a fit.
Well,
you know, there is overt and crypto racism, and the crypto variety is on display just about every time a member of the for-profit media talks about Barack Obama.
Well, I think he's been pretty much given a race clear type of thing. At least that's when he was elected, and that's when he came to the nomination process and was able to become our president. I mean, the fact that he was elected and elected with a fairly significant majority, was he not?
Yep.
To me, that indicated that at least there was an effort to eliminate some type of racial bias. But apparently, maybe it's not so.
I mean, just for the record, the actual purpose when the president called Mr. Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, the initial call was for? And this is worth a phone call.
Okay.
Mr. Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, had announced plans to take the stadium there in Philadelphia off of the grid with wind and solar power. You know what? I'd pick up the phone and call Mr. Lurie and congratulate him on that, too. And then in the course of just a civil conversation, it goes over into that stuff. And the next thing you know, the for-profit media is on fire. Can they mention the fact that this was a conversation about sustainable energy? No, hell no. It's about Barack Obama taking sides with the black man.
Do you really believe that?
Yes, I really believe that.
Okay.
Otherwise, why mention that the shaved ice was melon-flavored?
Well, I mean, as far as watermelon and stuff like that is concerned, I mean, that stuff I don't pay attention to. I could care less.
Well, but I do because I know the code.
If he has Campari-flavored ice, I mean, that's fine.
But, I mean, no, President Obama went today to the Hawaiian shaved ice stand and got a shaved ice for the whole family. If you got to report it, there's the reporting.
I don't even see why it's important enough to mention, Bob. That's my point.
Well, it isn't. It isn't, Jim. It's vapid.
Well, with so many other problems facing this country, I don't care what he has. I feel like he should be back in Washington.
But if you're the for-profit media and you want to make sure that you craft a story that shows how out of touch Barack Obama is with the sufferings of the ordinary human being, you have to pound on the fact that he went to Hawaii. Never mind the fact that Hawaii is his home. You have to pound on the fact that he's having shaved ice because it sounds like some sort of exotic something or another, especially in the midst of a damn blizzard on the East Coast. And you have to point out that it was melon-flavored because he's just like all the other Negroes and loves them melons.
Well, I just didn't see it that way. I'm sorry. You know, whether it's shaved, frappe, or whatever, I just didn't see it that way. You know, I just did not really make that association.
Well, maybe it's because I am actually a student of the for-profit media and I know how they work. I mean, there is more dog whistling that goes on in any given story about Barack Obama than most of us would have time to talk about in the course of a 3-hour program here.
Well, maybe so, but I still think that the man is to make some very serious mistakes, and I think he needs.
Yeah, see, Cindy in Washington just distilled it. She said the shaved ice story is a vehicle to introduce the code talk. Without the shaved ice story, they can't use the word melon. God help Barack Obama if he ever eats a piece of fried chicken. Because they will work that hateful old racist dog whistle, too.
I just don't see things that way. I mean, I did not make any connection between melon or whatever, because there are all types of different melons. It could be honeydew melon. It could be any type of melon.
Right, but they didn't say that. They didn't say cantaloupe. They didn't say honeydew. They didn't say cassava. They said melon.
That's reasonable.
Thereby leaving it to racist America to, you know, look at that, Marvelline. Even Obama likes some melon. They're all like that.
You and I just don't see things through the same lens, Bob.
No, I just grew up around it.
And we never. Well, I did too. You know, I'm from South Carolina, so you know, please don't make any license to comment on the attitudes of people in the South. I know quite well.
And as such, you know, I mean, you've heard all the slurs too.
Well, but having moved away from there, I just don't engage in those slurs.
Well, and you didn't engage in them when you lived there either. That's why you're an enlightened human being, and you've told us the story of the way that your family stood up when it was very downright dangerous to stand up. I remember you telling the story of the cross being burned in your yard.
Yeah, sure have.
And you know, you can get away from it, but once you've learned it and you hear it, I mean, you know, there are musicians out there who can tell you. It can tell you that the piece is Eine kleine Nachtmusik out of the first note, and racist code babble is that way for me. And I heard melon shaved ice, and I went, Jesus criminy.
Well, you know, I hope we had gotten beyond that, but apparently we haven't. And that's just, you know, according to you, that's what it meant to you. According to me, it meant nothing. But I just think that the man, and I will reiterate and get off here, and I'm going to leave you with this thought. I think the man needs to be back in town, taking care of some business, and I wish that he had not done some of the stuff he did by caving in the way he caved and not standing up.
No, you and I have no disagreement there. There are consequences to the extending the tax cuts for the rich that are almost too horrifying to contemplate.
What I'm talking about. I mean, you know, I don't give a rat's ass what the man has for dinner. I don't care if he likes watermelon, cassava melon, or whether he likes.
But you see, that's the other thing. The for-profit media has given a pass to extending the tax cuts for the rich because it shows he's bipartisan, and that's the tired old meme that the for-profit media has been hustling. Well, they hustle it like crazy every time a Democrat gets into the White House, Jim. You know, when a Republican's in the White House, we don't have to worry about bipartisanship because, you know, George W. Bush was a leader and he was going to push his agenda through. No mention of bipartisanship. But you get a Democrat in the White House and all of a sudden that's all they can think about, talk about, do is he's not being bipartisan. You know, there's this BS line that has been, pushed through the media of late that somehow Barack Obama is now going to be, he's got to prove that he's friendly to business. Well, what in the last 2 years has shown that he isn't?
Well, I understand that. He isn't friendly to business?
He is friendly. I mean, you can't be any more business-friendly than Barack Obama's administration has been.
I thought you said. And, you know, leaving you, you know, when I saw the photograph of him with that biography of Ronald Reagan in his hand, not with the spine showing, but the full face of the entire book jacket showing, I thought to myself, what in the name of God is this? Why would he be shown with that book in his hand, and he deliberately had that book in his hand, and was stupid enough to listen to Rahm Emanuel, who literally hated the man who helped get him into the White House in the first place? Is he that woodenly stupid or stupidly wooden, or is he that far removed from reality?
Well, see, the Reagan book is Obama brand 11-dimensional chess, Jim, and it drives the likes of me crazy, because I'm scared to death that he actually thinks Ronald Reagan was a good president and a great leader. Well, but the other thing is, it provides a real exploding head moment for the right wing, and all the freaks at places like World Wingnut Daily and the Freeperville and all those other sick little hog wallows of the right wing, because they know that people, well, look, what, huh? He's reading Reagan? Well, it may not be so bad, even if he is a fascist, communist, Kenyan Muslim.
Yeah, reading the biography of a man who once said in 1980, unless you're making $100,000 a year, you're broke.
Yeah.
And Reagan in his kitchen cabinet and Nancy and all that stuff. I mean, it was too much for me. Listen, I'm going to let you go.
All right, you have a good night, Jim.
Yeah, talk to you later.
Bye now. Jim calling from not too awfully far nearby. Kevin asking from Seoul, what if Obama was from the Caribbean? What then? Do they even know what we eat? The geography doesn't matter, Kevin. We're working, you know, the for-profit media is dog whistling the constant reminder to that racist segment of America that, you know, he's not like us. You see? And at the same time they're prattling stories about how, well, our polling data indicates that Barack Obama is still solidly supported by his essential base, the African-American voters, as if that's the only component that now comprises the Democratic Party. Well, he's got a pretty decent number with a lot of other portions of the Democratic demographic, too. I ain't one of them. But I'm also not gonna run off and say, oh, please, Jesus, let me be right. Let Jeb run so I can vote for Jebby. I ain't that guy. You know, as David in Tennessee notes, most of America still thinks Colin Powell's parents are from Alabama, not Jamaica. William writing in says, I have to agree with both of you, you and Jim. Yes, the media spins webs and people do get sucked in. My take on politicians is this. Why on earth would most of them give a damn about the people when the reality is the politicians are for the beyond wealthy and have nothing to lose and they claim to care? At a time when Obama sent more troops to Afghanistan to die and be disabled, is not the time to go on vacation simply when the people are at a sacrifice high mode alert and in constant worry. How well would it have gone if Kerry bought the new boat when he was running for office? Obama does have the right to say to the press to get out and not film him getting treats. Why didn't he do this? Because you have to make nicey with the Johnny-on-the-spot White House press corps. That's why. Kathy wrote in from Arizona. I used to live in midtown Sacramento. It may be above sea level, but if the American or Sacramento rivers run high and the dikes fail, it's bad. Jim's correct. All the old Victorian houses have their first floor up about 10 feet above grade. But, of course, the newer buildings have forgotten that it can flood, so most places will be underwater. Lessons hard learned. Cindy writing in saying, I think Barbara Beelzebub, regarding Jebby, I think Barbara Beelzebub is twisting arms telling her clan to be quiet, that's clan with a K, to be quiet about Jebby. It's time to lay low. They will spring it on us when the party runs Rand Paul and Palin for the ticket. With that inanity in the wind, they will then go for Jebby and Romney. Everyone will forget there were already two Bush presidences. After all, a couple of years will have passed. Their base will think that was 50 years ago. On our side of the fence, we will have Obama, the Republican black guy, everybody's nemesis. We're screwed. Paul writing back in, he says, with regard to Tucker Carlson, so Carlson also believes polluters that drive entire animal species to extinction deserve execution, right? No, wrong. No. They're not black enough to deserve execution, you see. I see many things in terms of race because this nation is defined by race. God forbid if Barack Obama's ever seen eating a dish of vanilla ice cream. The headline the next day will read, Obama plunges lips into sweet white dish. Because that's how the for-profit media are. It is that bad in this country. It really, really is. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
The History Channel. Did you catch any episodes of Ancient Aliens? Did they throw that in there?
Oh, Jesus.
Did you see anything?
Oh.
Did you see any segments or anything? You know, there's actually a channel on Justin TV where they actually they just run episode after episode after episode, and sometimes I go in that chat room just to see what people are saying. And it's amazing because, I mean, the whole scenario, the way it's set up is just, for example, the new episode that they're having is Joan of Arc. Did she go to the battlefield because she heard a voice from an angel, or was it extraterrestrial?
You know, I saw that promo and I was ready to run out into the cold and just, you know, let the exposure take me.
I mean, what History Channel has done is this is what they've done, basically, people. They've taken all of the basic, very special, special paranormal series of the year, where they don't have any seasons or ratings, and they found a way to just extend it into not a two-parter, not a three-parter, but we're talking a whole-blown series, people. And it's amazing how you notice. Here's the thing about it. Before I get onto the politics of the night. You notice that they have the same four panel people over and over and over again on Ancient Aliens. It's the same people every single episode. Da, 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 da. And it's just like in succession, like they took one conversation, they hit a blender, they hit a video blender, a digital video blender, and they said, all right, here's an episode, and here's another episode. And it's the same one over and over again. That's what's so brilliant about it. And the fact that...
Well, yeah, one day it's corned beef hash with potatoes, and the next day it's potatoes with corned beef hash.
And what's amazing about it is that our people's minds are so bamboozled by so much sensational media that here's the reality, people. The reality is that the cable channels could only do this once a year. They could only do it once a year, people. Once a year on one network. Now, they can do a whole run of 12 episodes because people say, I'm not tired of that crap yet. This is interesting stuff.
And the thing, and here's the fun part, the crap that they had on Christmas, they get to recycle for Easter.
Right, right. That's what I mean. It's crazy. And, you know, I'm watching the whole thing with the, I was watching episodes of the conspiracy theory, Jesse Ventura. I mean, my respect for Jesse Ventura as a person went down, the fact that he would just greenlight a show like that because it's such crap. The people that they have, the experts that they have, I'm like, oh, my God.
Well, how can you be an expert on space aliens? That's like being an expert on Keebler elves.
but you know,
I'll lose listeners out of that one.
Yeah, well, you know, there are some people who believe that you could actually experience elves and crystal kingdoms on DMT, but I'm not going to argue that because I've never been on DMT, so I don't know. But
I know you can experience the fronds of a fern turning into a burning snake on acid.
Well, there you go. But
I was never under the impression that they were really snakes.
But regarding what Jim was saying, Jim, I can prove to you that they do this kind of thing with ice cream. Bob, remember the story I brought to you about the ice cream place in Maine? And they had the spoon and the fist, and they tried to mirror it right where Barack Obama's head, and they did a close-up of it, and then they did a blog post on it, but it never caught fire because the owner of the place came out, and he basically killed the story dead on arrival, and basically said, look, the fist isn't anything to do with black militants. I came up with the 60s.
Remember the Obama space alien at the carnival?
Yeah.
Sure. And it goes, you know, it goes on and on and on. And this the whole thing is, I mean, look, you know, you brought us the story of the replica racist soap a week or so ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, this was, again, remember, just to catch folks up, these were not like 100-year-old bars of racist soap that had just been found in some odd lot at an estate sale. These things are reproduced on a regular basis and brand new labels, and they go to little stores and they sell them, you know, cool, what was it, the colored kids soap cake, where the K, the colored kids and cake are all spelled with a K.
Right.
And you see, there's a lot of those people in this country. I mean, my God, there's at least, this country is at least 20% enchanted by that crap because we have allegedly 20% of the country are teabaggers.
And you see,
same, same.
And you see, that ties in, Bob, into exactly of this racist perpetrating of the president when you have the governor of Hawaii, Neil Abercrombie, coming out and saying, I want to prove that he's from here. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe you took the bait.
I had the same thought. Bless his heart. What he said came from a really, really good, honest, and decent place.
I'm sure it did. But I set up a thread on this message board, and I was telling a particular radio host why having conservative flax over and over again. See, here's the thing. I'm not for. I'm partial to the point of where, okay, if you want to have conservative guests on every week, that a different one, but to have the same one on reoccurring every month or every 2 weeks, to me, people don't get the message because they're there just to get that bumper sticker out. That's all they care about. They don't care what you think. They don't care about anything. And the argument was, well, it's the water cooler wars, people. There's no water cooler wars when all they want to do is just spout out the bumper sticker that they heard. That's all they care about. They're not going to listen to you for a paragraph. They're not going to listen to you for a sentence.
I know.
Slogan.
I know. And it, Is there a remedy? You know, this really does. It may not seem like it, but this, you know, ties back into the argument of the concerns about cities that can't plow snow and cities that can't cut grass. You know, we don't have a fighting chance, David, of getting back to the place where we can answer the basic needs of the people, all of the people, like, you know, roads cleared of snow and the public restrooms that are actually open. We don't have a chance to get back to any of that until we can get past this.
Here's the other thing that the Democrats need to understand, and progressives and liberals and so forth. You need to get your bragging factor way up, people. Because if you don't brag in this country, nobody's going to listen to you. Point blank. No one's going to listen to you. Look how well that does for the Republicans. You have to brag about the accomplishments this administration has, even if you inflate it just a bit. You have to do it. And if you sit on your keister collectively, it's not going to happen. Because the right wing is always going to brag 10 steps ahead of you.
Because they've got 10 steps worth of media to do it on, David.
Well, that and the fact, but here's the thing, is that the Democrats and the Democratic politicians, they need to come out there and they need to have bullet points on their accomplishments and constantly run it over and over and over and over again. And they don't do that. That's my point on that.
No. And some of that is the fact that we don't have the framework to do it on.
Well, I mean, you know, I think one of the people to follow is George Lakoff, and
without a doubt.
And listen to what he has to say and pay attention. I mean, and then here's the other thing. I think people need to search more and more for what I like to call cultural lightning rods. And when you find those cultural lightning rods and those particular phrases, this is why a lot of people need to study the right wing even more intensely than they've done before. No matter how disgusting or sickening it is because they studied it for decades and decades on end. Tucker Carlson didn't just say that because he was like, oops, that's an accident. He said that because he knew it would get traffic to his site and traffic to all of his media enterprises. That's why he said it. He's a brand, and he's painted himself as a villain. And that's the other problem, Bob. The fact that we give so much attention to these theatrical villains. You look on the Huffington Post, and they put their headlines right up there. I mean, you can't go by a day without having a Sarah Palin story. I challenge anyone to show me one day.
I try so hard not to mention that horrible, horrible woman.
I know, but you show me one day where they do it, and they can't. You can't, because it's always there, day after day after day. And it's like, it doesn't matter what the story is. It doesn't matter how vague it is or how boring it is, they're always going to find a way to put that woman on the cover or on the front page of Huffington Post.
But I tell you what, I do love it when we have those little magic eight ball moments here at the Horn, David.
Yeah.
And I hear our messaging being repeated in a much larger forum. I don't know if you caught this the other day, and you know personally I don't care much for him. Don't really like him at all, really. But there was a blast headline out the other day. Ed Schultz declares he will no longer have right-wingers on his program. And then it followed up by saying, I'm just sick of them.
Yeah. But
welcome. Yeah, welcome. Welcome, Ed. Come on. Yeah, come on over, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been sick of them for a while. Because they're not allowed on this program. They're just not.
I completely understand. But you know, the other thing I wanted to mention to you before I go was the whole thing with the trailer for Kevin Smith's new film, Red.
Oh my God, I watched that.
And for people who haven't seen it, I mean, I've been talking about this film for 2 years. Go back to the archives or and check for reference.
No, I'll verify. You have been. It's been a long time coming.
And the thing about it is when I watched it and I watched the end of it, I was like, Jesus, man, this guy has a family. He's going to get so many death threats. This is going to be worse than Dogma. If the media wants to paint Kevin Smith in a corner, and because you know he's doing his first quote unquote serious movie,
yeah. What are his other credits?
You got Chasing Amy, Dogma, Clerks.
Yeah.
Silent Bob.
I thought Silent Bob and Dogma were his.
Yeah, so, you know, well, for those people who don't know about Red State, well, Kevin Smith decided about 2 or 3 years ago he was going to make a movie based on Christian fundamentalism in the 21st century.
But it wasn't going to be a documentary.
No, it was not going to be a documentary. And his friend said after he sent him the script, he just sent him an IM note. He said, "I dare you to make this," because he was just so amazed that Kevin Smith could actually write something like this with a serious tone like this and a dark nature.
Want to bet redstate.com, Susan?
I think so. The thing about it is though that it took a while to get funding for it because he's known as a smarmy, sarcastic clown. And when they read the script and when they read the content, they were like, "Wow, this is interesting," but you know how Hollywood is.
Yeah, this ain't gonna gross real good.
Yeah, it took him a while to get the funding, but he finally has, and he filmed it last year. And it's coming out in March, and John Goodman is in it.
Yep.
And a few others, a great supporting cast. And for people who want to check it out, go to Red State Trailer, and it should pop right up. And just
yeah, it's an engaging little trailer.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be interesting to see what it does.
Very much so, David. Thanks a million, brother.
All right, later.
Bye now.
Bye.
And I want to try to at least get one more call in, if at all humanly possible. Or maybe you guys were impatient and decided not to wait. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, let me check you on speakerphone, okay?
Okay, Tony.
Hey, what's up, man?
Not much, man.
How was your Christmas?
You know, it was quiet and nice.
Hey, listen, I'm glad you're talking. This is Tony. You obviously know that. I'm glad you're, first of all, before I go any further, I hope all the Horn listeners had a great Christmas, and I'm not at home right now, so I don't know who's in the chat room, but hi, everybody. Anyway, I know you're pressed for time, so I'm going to make this quick. I'm glad you're talking about the Tucker Carlson thing, because, I mean, first of all, he opens his sentence with, "I'm a Christian, but we should execute him." Really? Really?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, when you heard that line, what'd you think?
You know, me, I'm at that end of Casablanca place where I just say round up the usual suspects.
Okay, I got a few things to say, then I'll let you go. I think the reason why they do this with Obama is, okay, first of all, look at the Bush twins and look at Obama's kids. He's been in office for over 2 years and not one scandal. Okay? Okay, I think that this guy is so squeaky clean that they're just reaching for anything because they can't get anything on this guy, so they'll just throw anything against the wall to see if it sticks. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and I think it's, and you know, yes, I think you'll understand this. I think it shows, it gives you a good credentials if you can be judged on what kind of person you are by how you raise your kids. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, and so I think that the kids are so well behaved and so, you know, I mean, you never hear about them doing anything wrong. You know, so I think that these guys are trying to reach for anything. And one more thing, and I'll let you go. This thing is complete of underlying racism. And I'll show you what this reminds me of. Do you remember the Saturday Night Live skit about 20 years ago when Chevy Chase and Richard Pryor was looking for a job and Chevy Chase gave...
Oh, the word association?
Yeah, remember that?
Oh, very well. It's a classic. Okay. It couldn't happen on TV now.
I know, but that's exactly what's going on. These guys can't wait to use the N-word. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like every time Obama does something, it's like when Chevy Chase went colored. And they keep waiting for Obama to respond and go redneck. You know how it went back and forth?
Yep.
They're hoping that... Okay.
Honky. Dad honky!
Yeah. It's only a matter of time, and you know this is true. It's only... These guys... They're aching to use the N-word. They want to use it so bad. It's only a matter of time before one of these guys slip up.
Well, it is, and that's because they've created a culture where it's okay. And the minute it happens, look, it did happen. Look at Laura Schlesinger. She said the N-word 11 times in 5 minutes.
Yep, that's true.
And then when people called her on it and she started losing sponsors, she said her First Amendment rights were being violated. Said she had to leave the airways so she could get her First Amendment rights back.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to leave you with this, and I want your opinion on this before I hang up. God forbid, and I want you to tell me what you tell me what you think is going to happen. God forbid if he ever eats a banana in public.
There's a, no, there's a million of these, Tony.
Yeah.
There's a million of these. You know, remember when the new, what's that Murdoch paper in New York published the editorial cartoon of Obama as a dead monkey on the sidewalk?
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. Oh, what about the one where it had Michelle Obama and Barack in the White House, and she had a big throw with an AK-47? And
oh, yeah, that was the New Yorker cover. That was, yeah, and then there's the one that was the email that was passed around by some good, fine, upstanding Christian right-winger that showed him and Michelle dressed as a pimp and a hoe.
Yeah, these guys, it's only a matter of time before they slip up. And once again, but I'll let you go, but let me say one more thing. I mean, Tucker Carlson, can anybody take anybody that serious who wears ties like that, really?
Well, no, he's into real neckties now. They told him they wouldn't pay him anymore if he didn't quit wearing bow ties.
Anyway, thanks, Bob.
All right, take care, Tony.
Take care, bye.
Bye now. Tony from Vegas, and it's about 2 minutes before the hour, time to get out of here. The Rick Smith Show is on the way from behind the Scrapple Curtain in Pennsylvania. 3 hours of some of the best radio that's happening in America today. Check out Rick Smith. If you can't catch him live, catch the podcast at whiterosesociety.org by all means. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Those of you who contribute and have contributed, and those of you who offer your thoughts, your phone calls, your emails, your fun in the chat room. Thank you, all of you. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, who will be back from a long and happy Christmas break, editorializing right soon after the new year. Cavalcade of Crazy, head on RadioNetwork.com. Our Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com, OsborneInc.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Our chief engineer is John Fox. He's also our webmaster, web designer, chief musician, producer. You know, one of these, it would be a shorter list if I would just say what John Fox isn't. Only thing is, I can't figure out what that is yet. And of course, everything comes to you through the good offices of WhiteRoseSociety.org and the heroic work that Ben Birch has done since literally 2002, going on 9 years now. How about that? And the program continues to, in addition to your contributions, the partial sponsorship of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.